South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right. Well, a very good morning across the Hill Country in South Texas and wherever you might happen to be listening on the internet. It is a beautiful Saturday morning out there. Maybe not the first morning, but it really does feel like fall out there this morning. 62 degrees when I left home, and thinking, gee, that's almost a little chilly, and pretty good rains across the area this past week. So it's a great Saturday morning. It's a great Saturday morning to be talking gardening. It's a great Saturday morning a little bit later to be getting out and doing some gardening. So let's talk about it. Clint's going to be up first, but several open lines after that. You know how jammed up the lines get a little bit later in the show. So if you would like to get in early, this is what I call the Smart People's Half Hour. No commercial breaks till 6 o'clock. So give me a call, 210-599-5555. We'll get you on early. And maybe if you have one of those questions that takes a little longer to talk about, this is the best, by far the best time of the show to give me a call. So once again, you know the number, 210-599-5555. And I hate to keep people waiting, so let's just get started. Good morning, Clint.
Good morning. How's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. I was blessed to be under the right rain cloud this week. Got like 1.85 inches and a little cooler weather. So it's the start to a very good weekend. How about you?
You said 1.85?
Yeah.
Holy cow. I haven't figured out if I had a rain cloud or if it was a flock of birds went over me, but I only got 0.3.
Oh, wow. Well, it's something. You got some a couple of weeks ago when we didn't get it. So we just need some of these broad, widespread rains. It seems like we used to have. You'd look at the radar, and there was this big old front just coming down, sweeping across the whole area. And now it just kind of pops up here and there, but seems to be getting a little bit closer to what we are have been used to in the past, so we'll keep our fingers crossed. And it is a pretty nice morning out there. You've probably already been out, but it's very definitely a few degrees cooler than it has been this morning.
Oh, it's awesome right now outside. And yesterday when I left work, I was telling a coworker, saying, this is what a Texas heat wave should look like.
You got that right. You can tell we've both been around for a while and seen a lot of South Texas spring summers and falls. I told somebody the other day, said, yeah, we always used to say Texas only had two seasons, summer and January. And maybe we'll actually get a little fall if this kind of weather sticks around there. They're showing it's going to warm back up again, but thankfully not anywhere nearly as hot as it has been.
I hope not. I finally got that leaf diagnostic back from the plant disease lab, and apparently it's showing two different fungals. I'm going to try to say them, or you want me to just try to spell them out to you?
Try saying them at first, and then we'll spell them out if necessary.
Well, the first one is called Philostica leaf spot.
Uh-huh.
And the other one, leaf anthracnose fungal Colectrotrichium.
I don't know that one. And these were on avocado leaves?
Avocado.
Well, I don't know any reason that trichoderma shouldn't work pretty well at controlling them. And as we probably talked before, I'd use a two-prong approach. I'd give it a good garlic spray. And the important thing to understand about how garlic work is that garlic doesn't really attack fungi, pathogenic fungi. But what it does, it stimulates so many of the beneficial fungi that, as Elaine Ingham explained it in the course we took from her a long time ago, but she said there are only so many sites on a leaf where a fungus can get started, and said if all those sites are already covered up with beneficial fungi, then the bad guys don't have a chance. So that's why I recommend, you know, garlic as a preventive spray, and then I probably follow it up with some, you know, corn water tea just because that does grow the trichoderma, which does, I don't know of any damaging fungi that doesn't work against. It works in a couple of different ways to kind of boost what passes for an immune system in a plant, as well as, you know, directly taking out the damaging. So that's the two-prong approach I would probably use. Now, they probably recommended some little bit more toxic stuff out there, but I'd sure stay away from it if you can.
I'm not sure what it was recommending. I didn't have a chance to look it up or anything, but I was thinking about the corn water tea approach.
Yeah.
And would that be like kind of that on that garlic? Remember the dirt doctor had a garlic pepper tea.
Well, garlic pepper is great, and you get double benefits with the garlic pepper. The garlic, of course, like I say, well, it does a lot of good things, but primarily stimulating beneficial fungi is why we're interested in it in this case. The pepper half of it was originally put in as a repellent to those four-legged critters that like to chew on things. It's been found that, you know, the capsaicin, all the other good things in pepper juice have some other beneficial qualities, but of the two ingredients in garlic pepper tea, I think in your case the garlic is going to be the more important one.
Any chances the pepper will keep the caterpillars and grasshoppers away?
No. They don't seem to taste it, just like the birds don't. I still haven't heard back. I've got bunches of people trying to find us a good source of that NOLO bait for this coming year, but haven't heard back if it's going to be out there or not. But talk to some of the pretty heavy hitters in the world of beneficial insects and, you know, beneficial bacteria and things like that. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't know what name it'll be under. You know, it's been out there under the name of NOLO, been out there under the name of Semispore. But what we're looking for is just anything that has that Nosema locustri bacteria in it. And hopefully we'll see that back on the market by next spring. But right now it's just the old, feed the birds, get the birds to come in and eat the grasshoppers, hopefully. I'm not seeing as many as I did earlier in the summer, but so it's definitely, they're on kind of a downhill trend. And as you know, the grasshoppers lay their eggs in bare soil, so do anything you can to keep that soil covered up with ground cover or, you know, wintertime cover crops or anything you can, just to try to reduce their numbers a little bit when they start hatching out next spring.
Any chance you put a bounty on the grasshoppers with Stuart Frank at Medina?
That's one of the things I've been after Stewart about for a long time. It takes a fairly sophisticated lab to produce beneficial bacteria, and Stewart's got his hands full. He's making all the products he makes and putting new things in and blending things together, but growing microbes in that fashion is not really their forte. They do an awful lot of things that stimulate microbial growth, and he's out there researching constantly, but I don't think they're in a position, and I doubt that they're likely to have the time to actually get into the act of producing beneficial microbes. But there's some other folks out there, including the folks that produce most of our beneficial nematodes and some of the other beneficial insects and some of the other beneficial microorganisms that hopefully are taking a look at it. The biggest problem we've got going for us is that caterpillars or grasshoppers especially, they affect us across South Texas, but they're not a nationwide issue. And, of course, the folks out there who all they're looking for is bottom line, they want to try to make something they can sell to all 50 states. And there's just they have always claimed that there just wasn't enough of a market to really justify producing it. But there's some people in it taking a little bit more positive outlook. So we just keep pushing and hoping. I keep telling them we can generate quite a market for it if you'll just give us a product to sell.
I think they need to come out in Medina County and check out the number of grasshoppers out here. They might change their mind.
I tell you what, it's they've been bad. I've seen them worse. I mean, this is not the worst grasshopper year I've ever seen, but they certainly have been an issue, and throw drought on top of that and everything else is facing us. It's been a tough summer. I just assume we don't see another one quite like this for a while.
Now, my chickens, either they got too lazy, they're too well fed, but my first flock of chickens was real dangerous to use the riding mower. Every time I stir them up, they were all over it, and they run right in front of the mower, and these guys just kind of look the other way.
Well, it's I don't know. I'd maybe get a few guineas, too. Chickens are good on caterpillars, but they go after little grasshoppers, but like you say, they maybe the bigger ones scare them off. But guineas will eat almost anything, so you might want to think about putting a flock of guineas out there as well. They're not as high maintenance as chickens are. Unfortunately, you know, the owls are what kind of put me out of the guinea business, because they don't have enough sense to come into the coop every night. But they're kind of interesting birds. If anybody ever offers you any, you might give them a try. They're pretty low maintenance.
Well, I had a flock of guineas, and I think a couple of hawks come down and reduce my number to one right now.
Hi, Al.
But the biggest thing is, if you clip that one wing, they go to bed with the chickens. If they have both wings clipped, they stay out to the last bit of daylight left and stuff. So I always got to clip that wing, and they will go back into the coop, and they go in early with the chickens.
Well, I just may have to get that, talk to Dr. Kirby about doing that one of these days when I've got time to do that once again. I still got my guinea coop out there, so who knows? Maybe we'll try some more on one of these days.
Toughest part is catching them.
You got that right. Well, what's going on this morning? Well, I appreciate you calling, Clint. It's always good to hear from you, and appreciate knowing about these two new leaf spotting fungal organisms. But work on your corn water tea along with your garlic, and keep me posted on how they do.
And how long would that garlic tea last? And is that kept in the fridge and after making a concentrate? How do you recommend that?
Well, I always make things fresh. You can buy it as a concentrate under the name of either garlic barrier or mosquito barrier. And no, we just store the concentrate at room temperature. I suspect once you mix it with water, just all depends on what all's in your water. And, you know, you're in part of South Texas where you got all kinds of minerals in there. So you might, you know, pick up a couple of jugs of distilled water at the grocery store and mix it with that. You do that, I think it had a shelf life of several weeks.
Okay. All right, well, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
I appreciate the call. You get out and have a great weekend. And looks like Charlie and Carol and Jim are my next three callers. Let's talk to Charlie first. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, a few questions, short ones. I have St. Augustine.
Uh-huh.
And I have some runners that have gone into beds.
Okay.
And I have some spots where the grass hasn't done so well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to take those runners and put them in the dirt areas. Should I do that, you know, now, or wait till the spring to do that? And if
I
have enough runners, I could do both.
Yeah, I would definitely do it now. And just you'll need to water daily, lightly, to get them started, and be sure that they have good roots on them. Sometimes St. Augustine seems like it'll send out a, you know, 18-inch runner, and you only got roots on the first 4 inches of it. So be sure that you're getting a fair amount of roots with it. And if you end up with a lot of runners, a long runner, and only roots at the very proximal end, so to speak, you know, cut off the last two-thirds of it, because while it would be great to be putting a huge runner in, only the portions that have roots on them are really going to get off to a good start. But no, that'd be a good project for today or tomorrow. I wouldn't put it off at all. And a little fertilizer either before or after you plant, and a bit of Just a little organic compost over the top. You'd be amazed how quickly. That's how, you know, before the days of everybody in the world producing these big chunks of sod, that's how St. Augustine was planted. And that's how my grandfather did it. And he had a pretty nice St. Augustine yard.
Okay, well, I have something to do today.
Cool, you call weather. Me anytime you've got questions.
Yeah,
but, and
yeah. I still have a couple of another one.
Okay, go ahead.
And for like some Mexican heather and some bush sage, you know, okay. I put some down back in, I don't know, April, I think. I think they got one good rain until yesterday or Thursday.
Right.
If I'm going to replace those, should I do it before the winter or, you know, like doing it now? Or should I just wait till the spring and let them?
Are you going to replace them with the same thing or with something different?
I was thinking the same thing.
Okay, I would definitely wait on Mexican heather because it is not dependably cold hardy in this area. The Mexican bush sage, it puts on its, you know, prettiest flowers in the fall. It's a little bit of a short day bloomer. It responds to having longer nights and shorter days. So I wouldn't put that one off. You have chance to get a lot of good color, and you know, as long as temperatures don't drop below the upper teens, a Mexican bush sage is going to be totally hardy for you. So I wouldn't hesitate to replant it, but I'd definitely hold off on your Mexican heather until spring.
Yeah, these cold winters and these hot summers have been trying to keep things going.
Tell me about it.
Catches at either end.
It does.
And you've mentioned a tree removal company in the past. And I was wondering, hoping you could repeat that name for me.
Okay, and this is just a dead tree that needs to come down?
Or just live tree that too close to the house. It's overhanging my house, the neighbor's house. I'm just going to get, it's a live
okay.
oak. Just get rid of it.
Okay, for just straight tree removal, you know, I think best arborist in town is Ed Etter, but he's way backed up, and you don't need a specialist. You need somebody that insures his workers and knows, you know, how to do the job. And I'd recommend a company called Tree, T-R-E-E, Tree Wise Men. Owner's name is Jordy Hagen. And tell him we told you to call. He'll do a good job for you. Last time my business partner, had a property she inherited, had a couple of big dead trees on it needed to go, and Jordy's bid was about a third of what anybody else's was, and they did a nice job, and he insures his workers properly, so I don't have any hesitation recommending him to you. And like I say, we're not dealing with disease issues. You don't really need a specialist to do this sort of thing, or I might recommend somebody differently, but just for tree removal, they're hard to beat.
Yeah, healthy tree, just wrong place.
Yeah, and you know, that does happen. Now, don't let anybody scare you about roots tearing up your foundation or anything. That is rarely a problem. But if the tree's just too close, rubbing on the soffit, tearing up your roof, things like that, I can understand sometimes the need to take one out, much as I hate to see any healthy tree go.
Right, yeah, and it's just leaves, the branch is getting close to the roof. I've been trimming it. You know, but it keeps going, and I'm getting older, and so I'm just going
to ask him to take a look at it and get his opinion. You know, he might tell you, you know, our guys can trim that up to where you're not going to have to worry about it for another 5 years or so. But if it does need to go, that's who I'd call.
Okay. And one other thing. I put some dry molasses out, Tuesday. Before the rain, and the back says water it, you know, water after putting it out. And I was just curious, you know,
you're more than taking care of with the rain. The watering is just to get it into the soil, get it activated. It's not going to burn. It's not going to cause any problems. But it's kind of like fertilizer, dry fertilizers. It's not really going to go to work until it gets some moisture on it, and that's why the bike recommends it.
Okay. I did get it wet, but, you know, not very long, but And I was trying to, you know, trying to scan or schedule it with the rain. So, so I was one day early.
And you know, for the most part, you you picked a good time trying to schedule things around Texas rain this summer. It's been a pretty frustrating event, but that's the nice thing about dry molasses. It doesn't burn. Only negative is, you know, you may track it in on your feet because it is a little sticky, but it will do wonderful things for your landscape. If you have areas that really need any help, followed up now with a little bit of good organic compost, and you should be off to a beautiful fall and a better spring.
Okay. Well, that's all my questions this morning. So I appreciate you taking my time or taking my call, and have a good day.
You do the same, Charlie. Good to hear from you. And next in line is Carol. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
So I have, I've talked to you about this before, a pistache tree about 20 years old.
Yeah.
And it was separating. The trunk was separating in spots near the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And you told me to check it and see if it was smooth at the edges or rough. It is rough. And now it looks like vertical, the bark is like separating, sort of, vertical, all up and down the tree.
Okay.
I don't know what that is. Is that radial shake, sun scald, or what is that?
How does the foliage on the tree look?
It looks good.
It probably is nothing to be concerned about. Pistache, like most woody trees, sheds its bark periodically, and it is a moderately fast growing tree, and especially, you know, when it's dry and we get moisture, that inner core, the xylem, the cambium, the phloem, are the three layers there underneath the bark, and sometimes it just grows faster than the bark can, you know, split or can reproduce itself, and it just kind of forms a split, kind of like a snake shedding its skin or whatever. And as you've probably heard me say, it's been a common practice for, you know, 100 years with pecan growers to actually take a sheetrock knife or something like that and split the bark on a young tree vertically up and down the trunk, because they say it helps the trunk grow in diameter more quickly. So I'm not at all sure you have a problem. As long as that root flare is exposed, as long as the newest foliage on the tree is your best indication of the health of the tree. And if that new growth looks good, I would just probably attribute it to an ugly old 20-year-old trunk that's starting to shed some of its bark, but it should be producing new bark from the inside out. So at this point, I wouldn't, you know, be concerned. Now, if you have big areas, you just lose the bark and it's just plain smooth, you know, bare wood underneath, then it might be time to take a picture and send it to David Vaughn or somebody like that and say, do I need a consultation or something? But at this point, you're not telling me anything that really concerns me about that tree. And if it's got good, healthy growth, pretty much 360 degrees around the tree, I don't think you really have anything to worry about at this point.
Oh, okay. Well, the other problem is I live in Shirts. I have a 50-year-old yard. So this tree underneath is Augustine trying to hang on.
Uh-huh.
The rest of the yard is like bare spots and maybe some weeds that have died. So I was wondering if you could take just a second, talk about winter rye, how to prepare the bare spots for it. Do I have to rake them with a garden rake or just throw the rye seed on there and let it go?
The seed needs to make good contact with the soil. If the seed is sitting up on top of dead runners or sitting up on top of tree leaves or something like that, is not going to germinate and grow. But with St. Augustine, you can't get in there with a hard rake, with a grass rake, because you don't want to literally rip the runners loose from the soil. I might go over it with a leaf rake, just hard enough to expose the soil, and then just scatter your rye. Be sure you get one of the better, they call them perennial ryes, and they're really not perennial. But the last thing you want is this old annual Oregon rye. I know it's cheap, but it will turn into the nastiest stuff you've ever seen. So I would look for a good so-called perennial rye. There are lots of them. There used to be one out there called Playmate that I haven't seen for a couple of years. Last year, our favorite was one called Top Flight, and I believe they spell that F-L-I-T-E. And I know that's available at most of the nurseries around, and that's probably the variety I would choose. The other thing I would think about, and you could wait till after you put your rye seed, till it germinates and starts to grow, but I don't think there's any one thing you can do that will revive that grass better than putting a thin layer of compost over it. So areas that are really bad, I mean, get your rye seed down, keep it watered, it'll be up and growing within 10 days probably. But then think about following up with a thin layer of compost, and I think that's going to, it'll help the rye, but it is especially going to help your struggling St. Augustine.
Well, for sure. I mean, these bare spots, I have to have something. So I'll do the rye. And once the rye is up, should I fertilize it with Growing Green?
You don't have to wait for it to be up. I'd put the Growing Green down before you even plant the rye seed. This business of having to wait for grass to get established, that's very true if you're using these synthetic chemical products, which, of course, you're not. The organic mm-hmm. products can be put down before you plant, as you plant, or after you plant. You do what's convenient for Carol.
Okay. Okay. Next question and the last one. Is vermiculite the best medium for rooting an African violet leaf?
No, I think perlite is much better. Vermiculite actually holds too much moisture. And there's been a problem with vermiculite being contaminated with asbestos in it. So that's certainly not something you don't want to be breathing. The mix that I used to use for African violets was half perlite, half vermiculite. But given the choice of one or the other, they're going to do great in just straight perlite, much better than they will in straight vermiculite. It just holds too much moisture and doesn't let enough oxygen down into the root zone.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate all your help.
And I appreciate your call this morning. You get out and have a great weekend.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks, bye-bye. Carol. Goodbye. Jim, I'm just 15 seconds away from news, so hang on. You'll be up right after this news break. Do have some open lines, everybody. Grab one if you like. 210-599-5555. It's a beautiful weekend in South Texas. You're listening to KTSA Radio, San Antonio, Texas.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right. My engineer, Jimmy, tells me that Jim is the only person we have on hold right now. So if you were getting a busy signal there for a few minutes, hey, dial once again. You know the number, 210-599-5555. Probably get right through. And while you're doing that, let's just talk to the Jim that's been waiting. Good morning, Jim.
Morning, sir.
Good morning.
It's about 58 degrees over here in Nacogdoches County.
The deep piney woods have a beautiful morning going, it sounds like.
And as soon as I hang up, I'm going to get me a cup of coffee and go sit outside and enjoy it.
Excellent. Well, how can I help you?
I got a quick question. I have had to replant for years porterweed and Esperanza because they won't survive my winters.
Uh-huh.
And I don't really have a problem with them, you know, freezing to the ground, but then the roots die. If I've got some chickens, and so I buy pine shavings bedding. If mm-hmm. I cover the mound up over that, those crowns,
uh-huh.
With those shavings, will they make the winter?
Oh, they'll love it, and they most certainly should. What you might consider doing now, Esperanza gets to be a pretty big plant. Porterweed, of course, stays much smaller. In fact, both color varieties are very similar. But years ago, we were visiting the botanical garden over in Atlanta, and they do a real clever thing. They just take a piece of fence wire and just make a silo around it, something that's maybe, 15, 18 inches in diameter, and set down over the smaller plants that they want to protect, and they just fill it with leaves. And you could do the same thing with your cedar shavings, and of course, poultry manure is just one of the best fertilizers in the world. And I wouldn't necessarily use shavings that have a lot of very fresh manure in there. I would, you know, just about everybody that keeps chickens has a pile somewhere where it goes when you clean it out periodically. And I have in my vegetable garden, I always have kept two compost piles, one of them that I'm filling, and then when it gets full, I'll move over and start filling the other one while the first one cooks and gets ready. I'd kind of start doing the same thing, even if they're relatively small piles. And once it's set there for a few months, it's going to be the best mulch in the world for porterweed, Esperanza, just about anything else that you want to grow. But it should certainly help, you know, get things through the winter. Porterweed is much more cold sensitive than Esperanza. Esperanza actually should go down into the lower 20s and just come bouncing right back really strong next spring. So, you know,
is a single-digit winters.
Yeah.
Over the last couple of years. I'm surprised any of my stuff survived.
Yeah, it's been far colder than I never use the word normal when I talk about Texas weather, but it's been far colder than typically what we see. I hope we'll get away from that. The Old Farmer's Almanac says a really cold winter, the Western Pacific Oscillation, which controls our weather to a lot of degrees, is not so bad. So, as always, it's just prepare and wait and see. Other things that you can do, and start now, but every week or two, spray those plants and anything else. Well, spray everything you can down with a mixture of liquid seaweed, about 2 tablespoons per gallon. I add a little molasses. My mix is 2 tablespoons seaweed, 1 tablespoon molasses. But seaweed goes a long way toward making things more cold hardy. And research shows that it adds 5 to 10 degrees to, winter protection, so to speak. And it's just a really good thing to do. You do that and you cover the, you know, base of them a few inches thick with either pine straw or a mixture of pine straw plus your shavings with the chicken manure in it. And I can almost promise you this, Esperanza will come back. Porterweed, like I say, it's not as cold hardy, but provided we don't have just, you know, a lot of rain over the winter months, it should come back too. The cold is bad. Cold and wet is really bad.
Yeah. Well, on this heavy clay, I've got the triple problem.
It's the price you pay for living in a beautiful area. I was born in Tyler, not too terribly many miles up the road from you, and did live there for a long time, but the piney woods, there's just a certain beauty to them, the sound of the wind blowing through it. I spent one of my college years over there, and you're part of the world as well. But we've certainly paid the price the past couple of winters, but hopefully we'll get back to what is more typical. And to me, the weather looks like it may be heading that direction.
Well, they're not particularly pretty plants, but the butterflies love them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And on your Esperanza, do you grow the old standard Gold Star, or do you have some of the more colorful semi-dwarf varieties?
Well, I had the Gold Star. I didn't bother replanting this year. I'm looking at doing it again next spring.
Very good. Well, take a look at some of the semi-dwarf ones. Gold Star should get up 6 or 8 feet tall, even in a single growing season. If you have anywhere you'd like to have something a little lower, there's everything from sort of a butterscotch yellow to a yellow with a sort of a salmon center to it, to one that's truly orange, to one that approaches red. These don't grow as much with a single trunk or a single upright leader. They tend to be more bushy. But I've seen a plant, you know, 4 feet tall, probably with 500 flowers open on it. So if you've got a good sunny place, they might be fun to play with as well.
Well, now, I'd be just tickled to death if I could get Porciana to grow here.
Like the Pride of Barbados?
Yeah, the huge tree that they grow in South Florida.
Oh, no, you're not going to be able to do that.
No.
But, yeah, that's what they call flambeau trees, and you have to move to Brownsville if you want to grow those short of going to Florida. But there is a a dwarf, or it's actually a Cestalopinia, but people call them by different names. But this orange and yellow variety called Prider Barbados, if you have a sunny yard, it's something that you ought to look at growing, because it has been just a champion the past two or three summers, hasn't even blinked at 107 degree temperatures. And mine, once grown in my business partner's yard, you know, they've started blooming back in early summer, and they're just now finishing up their bloom period. So that might be something you'd enjoy mixing in with Esperanza and your other colorful summer plants.
Well, good deal. If I could get Poa annua seed, I'd be fine for the winter.
It should be out there.
Yeah, folks treat it as a weed. I love it. You know, it's too short to mow, and it's green and pretty all winter long.
Well, it is. It requires water, and you guys have, you know, gotten a fair amount of water. We've been so desperately dry over in our part of Texas that we don't grow a lot of it, because it is a little bit thirsty, but where you've got the moisture, it's a great green thing to have out there in the winter months. Great green grass is really pretty.
The sunshine's not a problem here, because this used to be a pasture.
Uh-huh.
Bad grass is a problem, but I'll never kill it all out.
Welcome to gardening.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you also for recommending Sun Gold Sweet 100s and Arkansas Travelers. That's been my best tomatoes ever this year.
Well, I'm glad to keep planting the variety and throwing some Cherokee Purple, and I'll let you know if anything comes along that I think is really outstanding. If you're looking for production, I don't like the flavor quite as well as Sweet 100s, but check out Juliet next spring, too. It's the most productive. It's sort of a teardrop-shaped cherry, but it's probably, in terms of pounds of good tomatoes produced, it'll even beat the Sun Gold and Sweet 100. So you might try that in your mix next year.
All right. Well, thank you much. You have a good one.
You do the same, Jim. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
It's going to be Jan and Pat and Faye and... yeah, let's go ahead and take one more call. Let's talk to Jan. Good morning, Jan.
Morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I was calling about, I have a ponytail palm, and it's very big.
Uh-huh.
And on the bulb, I keep it outside right now this time of year. Yeah. On the bulb, it's starting to have all these little babies.
Right.
Do I just leave those, or...
It depends. If it depends on what you want it to look like, Janet. Ponytails, Bocarnia to be botanically correct, is a plant that typically grows with multiple trunks. Most of the ones that are sold have been pruned up to just have a single trunk. Biggest one I ever saw was growing in an old man named Albert Wilson's yard in Old Mito, Texas. That thing was probably 25 feet tall and had either 7 or 9 trunks coming up. So if you want a big bushy ponytail palm, that's the way that Mother Nature would have it grow. If you prefer having it more tree-like, then you just need to clip those little ones off. You can't really root them. Bocarnias are almost exclusively grown from seed, but it's just saying, you know, hey, I think I'd like to be a bush rather than a tree, and you decide which way you want it to grow.
Okay. I also have a pineapple guava.
Mm-hmm.
So it never blooms, and I figure it's because it's too much in the shade.
Probably.
But if I want to trim it because it's kind of lanky, do I wait till like it gets a little cooler around here?
I would wait until it gets cold, because the thing about pruning in the fall, especially mid-fall, is it's still warm enough that it may encourage the plant to put on a burst of new growth, and that's the last thing we want, because it takes a while for it to harden off, so to speak, to get ready for cold weather. Pineapple guava is not 100% cold hardy, and the last thing we want to see is a whole bunch of new growth on it when we get that first freezing weather. So once we get into Oh, I would say mid-December into January. You can prune it any time you want. I would tend to prune it in early spring, which in, you know, where I'm is probably going to be early to mid-February. But the one time you don't want to prune it is that October-November period when we're still warm, because you do not want it to start sprouting back out.
Right. Okay. So usually they're supposed to make fruit, right?
I will tell you, they usually bloom. They occasionally make fruit. It's a most unusual bloom, and they're really pretty, and it's a great plant to grow. If you want to midwinter, you might consider moving it to more sun, or if you have any trimming you can do to give it more sun. I think probably it is the lack of sun is why it hasn't bloomed for you, but given enough sunlight, I can almost promise you flowers, maybe not on the fruit, but the flowers are, they're just striking. They're have kind of an unusual shape to them, and they're kind of a pink lavender color as the base color. They're pretty plants that I wish more people grew. They're just not real widely available.
Okay, so it can take our full sun, or?
I would say the ideal place would be sun up until about 2 in the afternoon. If you're in good soil, it will take full sun. If you're in somewhat marginal soil, like most of us are, maybe sun until that hottest part of the day, and then a little bit of shade.
Okay. All righty, then. Thank you for your help today.
Always a pleasure, Jan. Thank you for the call this morning.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye. All right, Pat and Faye, hang on. Got to get a break in here, and you guys will be up next. Looks like I get to talk about Medina Agriculture, and sure do need to remind you that fall fertilizing is probably your single most important time of the year to fertilize. And, of course, you've got great products from Medina. The two Growing Green products are outstanding as fall fertilizer. Don't let any of these turkeys tell you that you have to buy something that says winterizer. When using good organic products, you use the same thing year-round. And if you've got some Growing Green left over from spring, well, go ahead and use it. It doesn't go bad, and your plants will love you. Not just your grass, but your trees and shrubs and everything trying to recover from what's been a really brutal summertime. Medina's there to help you. And, of course, they've got great liquid products. I use those in containers like the Has to Grow Plant and the new Liquid Fish Blend. Medina just makes absolutely quality natural products. Of course, they also have their great Medina Plus and Medina Soil Activator. That's some of the best root stimulator you will ever use when you're planting your fall vegetables and your fall flowers. And of course, if you're building the soil, their Humate products are outstanding. And of course, the liquid seaweed. There's just so many good products that have the name Medina Agriculture on them. If you want to see the full list, go to their website at medinaag.com. You want to see them in person, just go to a good nursery or garden center. They should be well stocked on quality products from Medina.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right, let's get back to gardening and back to the phone calls. Pat and Faye are my next two callers. Do have a couple of open lines. Grab one if you like. 210-599-5555. Pat's first. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Bob. Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of questions.
That's what I'm here for.
Asparagus. It's been kept alive by watering, and then I give it that Has to Grow, you know, Medina products. Mm-hmm. What do I do not to keep it going? Do I put more compost on top of it? What can I keep it going? Because I want my asparagus for the spring.
Well, keep watering and fertilizing. Those are the two most important things. And Medina's Has to Grow is a great plant to use on your asparagus. I like something a little bit lighter than compost. I mean, a thin layer of compost is good, but I like a looser mulch because, the professional asparagus growers, they sometimes mulch asparagus 12 inches thick. And if you want that white asparagus you see in the grocery store, that's how they do it. They put the mulch so thick because the green pigment in plants called chlorophyll doesn't turn green until it gets sunlight. It starts out as a colorless material called prochlorophyll A or something like that. And if you keep your asparagus, you know, from the sunlight, you can have that super expensive white asparagus. I don't think it's worth that much trouble, but the point is you don't have to really worry about putting too much mulch on the top. But I like a little bit looser, more open mulch than a true finished compost. So even if it's just shredded up leaves, yeah, mulching is going to be really important. I don't usually put the mulch on until I cut it down for the winter, and if it freezes back, then I'm just going to cut it down to maybe an inch tall and put the mulch on top. If it hasn't frozen back by the 1st of January, then I'm going to cut it back even with, if it's green, and go ahead and put the mulch on it, because I've had good asparagus. If we have a milder winter, it may start regrowing and giving you those wonderful spears by the middle of January, or sometimes even a little earlier.
Okay, but the other day I went out and it's shooting spears up, and I thought, that has never happened to me. They're going crazy with the weather, too.
It's just confused like the rest of us, but harvest them immediately and enjoy eating them. At this point, you've probably got enough big old green fronds on it to get it ready for winter. And asparagus shoots like that never even make it out of the garden. They get snapped off at ground level and consumed before anybody else even knows. I don't tell people how well my asparagus is doing most of the time, but they're absolutely delicious. And from a nutritional standpoint, they've got some of the healthiest products, you might say, in them that you're going to find. It's a great crop to grow, and so easy. And it sounds like you've learned how much water they take and the value of fertilizing. You'll probably have your best year ever this spring.
Well, it's been great. It's been great. They're beautiful. That's the only good thing in my whole yard. I have a couple of other questions. When I'm bringing pots inside the house, what can I totally water so I don't have all those nets? My son said, oh, my gosh, you brought, but this was in New Hampshire, Vermont area. I brought his pots in, and he said, you got flies? I got flies all over that little place, those little bitty nets. What can I put in my pots to get rid of everything before they start?
Getting rid of the fungus gnats and getting rid of everything are really two different stories, because the thing that will get rid of fungus gnats is a bacteria called BTI. Stands for Bacillus thuringiensis israeliensis. Now you know why we call it BTI. But it is a bacteria that kills mosquito larvae, and it also kills fungus gnat larvae, but it doesn't do anything about the ants and the millipedes and things like that. So if fungus gnats are a concern, give them a good drench. You can buy BTI by the name of mosquito bits or mosquito granules or mosquito dunks, whatever you're getting. Just soak those in water overnight and use that to water your plants next time they need it. In general, if you're having a problem with fungus gnats, it probably means you're watering a little too often. So when you water, water thoroughly, but let those plants get dry an inch deep before you water again. That will probably control them on its own, but if you've already got them, the BTI is what's going to really control them. If you have issues with ants, roaches, millipedes, things like that, Spinosad, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D. Spinosad is a totally safe and natural insecticide. In fact, it's so safe, it's in a different form called Comfortis. It's even given to dogs for flea control. And I think Dr. Kirby told me there's a new Comfortis out for cats, too. Anyway, Spinosad is the drench that will take care of just about every kind of crawling bug you can find. The fungus gnats, you just need to use something a little different.
So don't put any orange oil or stuff like that mixed with orange oil.
I would use that only in an extreme measure, because orange oil, if you get it a little too strong, it'll burn roots. I would say you really don't need to, so I probably wouldn't.
Okay, I was given, someone gave me 5 huge bags of cornmeal. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do with it. He said, just put it all over your yard and everything. Cornmeal is round cornmeal. And I'm thinking, well, I know they're going to get bugs in it, so I better find out what to do with 5 50-pound bags of cornmeal. I don't know what to do with it.
Have a garage sale. No, cornmeal has many good properties, primarily for controlling damaging fungi. And it's not the cornmeal that's the magic. It's a beneficial fungus called Trichoderma that grows on the cornmeal that will control everything from oak wilt to toenail fungus to ringworm to root rot. Just about any kind of damaging fungus you can control with cornmeal, either putting down dry cornmeal, or in the case of protecting trees and things, we found that making what we call cornmeal tea, which simply means putting a couple of cups in a 5-gallon bucket and soaking it overnight, that cornmeal tea drench can be used for a wide range of things. Now, you've got several years' supply of cornmeal unless you live on acreage, so...
No, I don't.
you do want to keep the bugs out of it, because it will get weevils. And probably right. The easiest way to do that is get some bay leaves. I'd like to hope you have a bay tree growing in your yard or a bush. But if not, see if you can find somebody. I hate for you to pay grocery store prices, but putting a few bay leaves mixed in with your cornmeal seems to do a really good job of keeping most of the bugs out of it. Short of that, you could actually mix a little diatomaceous earth with it, and that will also help, and yet it's totally safe for you.
Okay, because he says that that's what he fertilizes his yard. It was my fertilized yard with cornmeal, and I thought, I've never heard of that. But
well,
go ahead, and I'll call you.
You may be smarter than he is, because there are two different products. Whole ground cornmeal is what we use for fungus control. Now, if right. you were to take corn and take all the high fructose corn syrup out of it, you would have a protein left over, which is called corn gluten meal, CGM as they call it. Corn gluten meal is a totally different product that is higher in nitrogen, I think 9% nitrogen, and has some pre-emergent use. And so find out for sure whether you've got cornmeal or corn gluten meal. Because if you have corn gluten meal, then it's going to be a whole different thing. And you're going to be putting that on the yard, both as potentially a fertilizer product. And I'm not going to tell you it gives you 100% weed control. As a natural pre-emergent or as a pre-emergent, it's the best stuff going, because it is a natural pre-emergent. It's not one of these synthetic toxic chemicals. But, It's not just a matter of put it out once and you won't have any more weeds. But first thing to do is figure out whether you've got cornmeal or corn gluten meal. If you find you have a corn gluten meal, why don't you call me back and we'll spend some time going over that.
No, don't have corn gluten meal. It's plain old cornmeal. And he said he puts it around his roses and he puts it in his garden and blah, 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 blah. But you know, that's what I was just kind of,
yeah, it's there. And it's good for those things. It cuts down on powdery mildew and black spot on the roses, takes care of early blight and many other problems in the garden. Fantastic to use it that way, but it's not a fertilizer, and it's not doing him any good as a fertilizer.
It's not doing him any good. But I have a Myra lemon that I got from Malcolm back at his, you know, that 80th birthday he had.
Oh yeah.
And I have kept it in this big, 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 big container all this time. I guess I should have put it in the ground. Is it too late? Can you just keep it in a container? Because I do get Myra lemons off of it, but it is getting so huge to reel around. I mean, it's wide and it's tall.
Well, it does not hurt it being root-bound. That's one of the biggest myths out there, is it hurts a plant to be root-bound. It is happy being root-bound, and it's probably why it's doing so well. The only problem with becoming very root bound is that it tends to dry out quickly and you have to water pretty often. But there have been, you know, tens of thousands of Meyer lemons killed by the freezes over the past three winters. So, as long as you can wheel it around, as long as you can keep it in that pot, don't change a thing. It's going to be much happier there than it would be in the ground.
Oh, yeah, I have it in one of those huge molasses containers, you know, the farmers have. I think that's what I've been in. But, I mean, it's Gardenville was my place. I mean, you in Gardenville, Malcolm, and all his, your knowledge is have just been wonderful, and I just thank you for everything. Oh, my God.
Well, it's our great pleasure. We all miss Malcolm. I actually talked to Bruce Dooley earlier this week, and he told me, as far as he knows, that Delphine is still with us on this earth, and don't know exactly where she is, but I tell you what, back when Malcolm was alive and running things, it was a really good organization. When it got sold out to corporate America, it's not what it used to be. I'll just put it that way. But I, like you, I learned an awful lot from Malcolm, and truly miss him.
I do, too, and I didn't like the fence they put up either. Not Malcolm. The other
a whole nother story. Pat, you get out and have a wonderful weekend. It's good to hear from you.
Thanks a lot. God bless. Okay.
You do. Bye. Goodbye. All right, guys, hang on. I got to get a break in here. Faye, Kay, and Albert are my next three callers. Looks like I get to talk to you about Green Grow Organics and Sam Sitterly. And I'm so happy to tell you about Sam's new program. He just, you know, his motto is saving the world one organic landscape at a time. And he just hates it as much as I do, watching these companies that come around want to set you up on a quarterly contract and come spray your yard with poison and dump all this chemical on your yard that will give you fungus and maybe make it green at the same time. Well, Sam knows that that's not the right way to do it. So he set up his own program, no contracts, but he'll just set it up so that his guys come around monthly, and their services include feeding with compost tea on an annual basis. They add micronutrients. They put on nematodes as often as is needed to control problems in your yard. It's just giving you all the benefits of a yard service, so to speak, without all the toxic chemicals. And like I say, there's no contract. There's no obligation. And Sam certainly still does individual consultation. If you just need him to come out, walk through your landscape with you and tell you what's right and what's wrong about what's going on, he is still happy to do that. Check out his website, greengroworganics.com. If it looks good to you, give him a call. Be sure you understand all charges up front, of course, but it is the organic answer. Everything Sam does is organic, and it's sort of the organic answer to having somebody that gives you, in effect, a lawn fertilizing and pest control service. Always done the right way. Green Grow Organics, check out the website. Give them a call at 599-5565.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening and back to those phone lines. It is going to be Faye and Kay and Albert. Faye is first in line. Good morning, Faye.
Good morning, Bob. Good morning.
Good morning to you. What's going on today?
Well, looking for a pretty day over here. I think we'll have a good one to be outside, and so glad for that, that's for sure.
And looks the same way over here. This is going to be, I think, our first real day of fall-like weather, so it's going to be a good day to spend some of it in the garden.
I think the same here. We've kind of worked into fall, and hopefully it'll be a good winter. We all deserve a good winter, don't you think?
I it depends on how you define good, but I would like to hope for a typical moist, mild winter is what I'm hoping for.
Well, maybe we'll get it. I have a few questions for you. With some of the seed packets I have, they're the small ones, and they have on back of some of the flower ones that it shows Texas, our part of the world, is able to put some of those seeds in and plant them this time of year. Is that right? Are there some seeds for flowers that you could grow, some plants right now?
Very few, because most of the flowers produce such tiny seed and such tiny little seedlings, it's hard to get them started. Now, having said that, there are people out there who have alyssum that they plant, and, you know, it may come back from year to year. Same thing is true of lobelia. Rarely, but it does happen. Petunias may come back, but petunia seed is very, very tiny. So, yes, cool weather plants can certainly be planted in this kind of weather, and it's an ideal time to get them started. the seed is just so small and the seedlings are just so tiny. If you have any pill bugs or snails or slugs or anything like that, they'll just mow them down before you even know that they have sprouted. So is it possible? Yes. Is it something I recommend? No, I think it's much more reliable setting out the little plants that are already growing. But you love growing things from seeds, so I say go for it. Just really keep that Slogo Plus out. Just keep a close eye on things. Maybe even, you know, put some cornmeal down at the same time you plant your seed to head off fungus problems. But you're a good gardener. Chances are you'll have, like most of us, some successes, some failures. But it's not the hardiness that normally is the issue. It's just the seed's so tiny, it's hard to get started.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I have some pasture seeds that I've needed to wait till about now to plant. And I don't really have farming equipment, and so I want to rake up the soil, kind of break it up, and will that work, and do I need to press them?
Most grass-type seeds, you just say the seed simply needs to make good contact with the surface of the soil. One thing that, and it's been a while since I've been on my tractor, but I used to just, when I was going to plant, you know, winter oats and things like that, I would plant them very shallowly and then just, you know, run a drag over the top to level it out and pick up any debris and things. But just being sure you've got good seed to soil contact is the most important thing, Faye.
Okay. Well, I'll just do that kind of by hand and keep it, probably down here I can keep on planting through the several months.
We hope so. Just remember that little seedlings are not cold hardy until they've had a little time to harden off. When they first go in the ground, even pansies can, you know, freeze when they come up. Same thing's true with even hardy, cold hardy things like spinach. That first couple of weeks is critical. So if you plant, they sprout, and then we get an unexpected cold spell, you probably need to cover them. Other than that, you should be fine.
Well, I'll get busy here and get it done. And the other question I had, are there some small trees that can live in a pot and be movable that you can think of that should be available somewhere?
There are lots of small trees. Some of the maples, everything from the dwarf Japanese maple to, well, there are, you know, probably 100 different varieties out there, but they are mostly understory trees. A few of them will take the sun, but if you're looking for a tree that can grow in a shady area, most certainly they will do well. Many crepe myrtles I consider to make reasonable trees, probably not the 30-foot tall ones, but maybe the, you know, 8 to 12-foot tall varieties would do just fine in pots. They can be trimmed to be tree-like and can be quite beautiful. Where you are bay, you know, the bay laurel, same thing you pay a lot of money for in the grocery store, beautiful shrubby plant. You could trim it to a tree. I'd rather trim it as a multi-trunk tree, but it's a beautiful evergreen, aromatic, and is an excellent container plant. There are a number of things. Standard Yaupon holly can be trimmed to make a beautiful tree. And if you want something really unusual, and I think beautiful, just a work of art, what they call the weeping Yaupon holly. And it'll grow to a tree 10 to 12 feet tall, but it would be not fast growing, but that'd be a gorgeous tree to keep in a container. There is the Mexican redbud is the shorter of the redbuds. You could grow that in a container if you like. The so-called anacacho orchid tree, the white-flowered bohinia, that would be a good container plant, which should be cold hardy in a pot for you. That's just a start. Does that give you a few to consider?
Well, it sure does. I thought I'd be lucky to find that there were one or two. So, my goodness, that opens a whole idea. So, thank you for that. just appreciate the programming so much.
Well, it is my pleasure to be here for you, and you get out and enjoy this beautiful weekend, and I know we'll talk again.
Mighty Thank fine. You. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Faye. Goodbye. All right, quick break here, then it's going to be Kay and Albert. Looks like I get to welcome back to the program the Freeze Miser. I know the last thing you want to think about, considering that it was 100 degrees last week, is freezing weather, but it's coming. Who knows if it'll be a cold winter like the Farmer's Almanac says, or if it'll be a milder winter, but I can tell you, frozen, broken pipes are a real mess. And the best way I know of to prevent it on your outside hydrants and things is with the Freeze Miser. Neat, neat little device that automatically drips your hydrants when the water temperature in the pipes gets to a certain point. When it approaches freezing, it's simply the Freeze Miser starts dripping. When it warms up, the Freeze Miser stops dripping. Maybe for that hunting cabin or that fishing shack down on the coast, you don't want to just suddenly hear they've dropped the forecast and you've got to rush up and drip the faucets. Freeze Miser does it for you automatically. Been around for several years now. I tell you, I certainly use them on my outdoor hydrants up in the hill country, and have literally, oh, I guess thousands of people now have tried them and absolutely love them. You'll start finding them available in your nurseries, in your feed stores, in your better hardware stores. Not going to find them in the box stores, but for a great Christmas gift for your friends or something that will really make your life easier, you need to remember the name, the Freeze Miser, F-R-E-E-Z-E-M-I-S-E-R. You can read all about them at freezemiser.com.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550, KTSA, and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening and straight back to the phone lines. Kay is first. Good morning, Kay.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
When we first bought our property, we didn't have it landscaped. Mm-hmm. We just went out back in the pasture, pulled up a tree, stuck it in the ground, and it grew because we have such good soil.
Right.
And one of those trees now is an elm that's over 50 years old. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really tall. It's got some dead limbs in the top. And even though I have a new house, but even though it's set way back from the road, I think a limb could potentially reach it, or across the street in the front, it could go to the neighbor's fence.
Uh-huh.
So if I do take it down, what would I replace it with? Because it's right on the street, right on the curb. If anybody parks under it, a limb could just drop on it, you know?
Well,
it has really tight wedges in the limbs, really tight
and
straight up.
That's just the way that elms tend to grow, but I would remind you it's been there 50 years without causing a problem. So I'm not going to panic over this, and I just, any healthy tree, and all trees are going to have a little dead limb in them every now and then. I think you would be probably wise to have an arborist take a look at it and say, this is a weak spot, you know, this we might need to cable this, we might need to brace this, or he might say, hey, you're right, this tree's, you know, outlived its useful life, and if you've liked the elm, I would just plant another elm there, but I'm reluctant to tell you to take it out because it's probably got another good 50 years of life in it. But exactly where are you?
I thought they only live 50 years.
Oh, no. Gosh, I can tell you places around San Antonio that they're probably easily 100 years old. There are many different kinds of elms, and what you have is probably a cedar elm. But and where exactly are you located?
Shiner.
And Shiner. So you've got good deep soil. Other trees you could consider, you could certainly consider a Monterey oak or Mexican live oak. They're fast growing, probably about like a cedar elm is. There are some other extraordinarily hardy oak trees that don't get oak wilt, like your bur oak, your Lacey's oak, your chinkapin oak. Those are also good shade trees. If you're just concerned about the next 50 years, fastest growing tree you could put out there would be a Mexican sycamore. And if you want just a big bushy tree, there are crepe myrtles like the Basham's Party Pink that are going to grow more than 30 feet tall, and they'll give you nice flowers in the summer months, as well as, you know, being very tree-like in their growth habit and grow as big as many shade trees do. So those would all be certainly potentials for a replacement tree for that. But like I say, I'm not going to give up on it yet. I'm going to get somebody to take a close look at it and say, is this tree a hazard? If so, can we fix it, or should we just remove it? I'm not going to write it off just because it's 50 years old. That's like saying, well, what's the average lifespan, 78 years or something like that? I don't know about you, but I'm hoping to go considerably beyond that, because I've got a little sign somewhere that says the good Lord put me on this earth to accomplish a certain number of things, and right now I'm so far behind I'll never die.
Okay, well, if a limb falls, so far they've just kind of dropped down. They've just dropped straight down. Do they ever fall where it's like timber, like that kind of?
Depends on how hard the wind's blowing. If you got a 40-mile-an-hour wind blowing, you know, almost anything can happen. But that's going to be true with any tree. But if it were a hackberry, I'd probably be concerned because they're such big old heavy limbs. But
I've taken all those out already.
Yeah. Yeah, again, get a good arborist, not just a tree trimmer, but get a good arborist to look at you and give you an evaluation on the structural integrity of the tree, and then make your decision about what to do.
Do you know a good arborist in my area?
I don't, but you can call David Vaughn here in San Antonio, and he probably does. Tell you what, Kay, I've got to get to news. I'll tell Jimmy to put you back on hold. We'll talk a little bit more after this news break here on KTSA Radio.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now, 210-599-5555.
All right, let's get back to gardening here. And, you know, just hearing them talk about events coming up, I'll remind you, 2 weeks from today is going to be the herb market down at the Pearl, which we've had every year for a lot of years now. I'll be broadcasting down there, but that's coming up 2 weeks from today. Into November, Green Space Alliances has their big kind of fall fling, and wonderful organization, truly an urban land trust is what they are. There's some fun things going on around, and we'll talk more about those. Right now, I want to get back to the phone lines, and Kay, I took the opportunity over the news break there to look up David Vaughn's number for you. Do you have a pencil or a pen to write with? Okay, 210-788-4986. He's a consulting arborist. He's not a tree trimmer. And like I say, he's here in the San Antonio area. Recommend him highly. I've known him for years. But I would call him because he has contacts all over this state, and he might very well know somebody that could help you over in the Shiner area.
Okay. Do you think he would also know somebody in the like a nursery in my area that would do landscaping? I'm going to landscape my yard whenever the weather kind of straightens out a little bit. But most of the nurseries around here, they're not even familiar with the root flares or girdling roots or anything like that. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know about that.
Well, I don't know. Trees are his business, but, you know, he's a great guy and been around for a lot of years. So all I can say is you can ask him, but finding a good landscaper is a hard, hard thing to do. You might ask around your circle of friends and just, you know, ask who they might know that they've been pleased with. It's hard, you know, in this crazy world, everybody wants to sit on their rear ends instead of getting out and working. And, but don't get me going down that road. There's bound to be somebody out there, but, ask David, but you're more likely to get information of that sort from, your circle of friends over there.
All right. Thank you so much for your help. I appreciate
Always a pleasure, Kay. Thank you. Albert's next in line. Good morning, Albert.
Hello.
Good morning, sir.
Hello.
Hello. I hear you loud and clear.
I have a plant that I know is a desert rose.
Yes, sir.
And everybody wants a piece of it or whatever. I don't know how to propagate it.
Well, this time of year, you're not going to have any luck propagating it. In the spring, you could take some cuttings from it if you wanted to. I tend to tell them to go out and buy their own, if it were me, because that's a plant you really don't have to prune. It can grow into a big plant. I've seen them with 50 flowers on them. But if you want to propagate it when it warms up in the spring, end of March, 1st of April, that would be the time you could take some cuttings, root them in perlite, and you'll be able to do it successfully. But moving into the shorter days, the cooler weather of fall, unless you have a greenhouse, unless you have a propagating mat, it would be difficult to propagate it at this time of year.
Is it going to make that big bulb on when you root it? It'll that big bulb?
It ultimately will. Now, it's not like a ponytail palm. It grows a little differently. But that big bulbous structure, yes, sir, your cuttings will form that. Over time, it doesn't happen overnight, but yes, the cuttings will form that expanded area at the base, just like yours has.
It bloomed so pretty this past winter that everybody wanted a piece of it.
Well, I can see why. And we should have talked back in the summer when you could have taken some cuttings and had nice Christmas presents to give them all. But it is a heat lover. I mean, it needs to come in when the temperatures drop down below 60 degrees, which looks like it's going to be coming up.
I had it on the back porch in that 100 degrees temperature, and it didn't even faze it.
No, it's a sun lover. It's a warm weather.
Do the cuttings have to have a leaves on the top?
It would be ideal if they had one or two leaves on the top. You don't want them to have a lot of leaves because that will dehydrate the cutting before it starts to root. But being thick stemmed like it is, no, they'll be fine whether they have leaves or not. But the ones that will root fastest and grow best will have no more than two or three leaves on them. If you take a cutting and it has 8 or 10 leaves, you want to take most of them off.
Okay. I've been listening to you so long that most of the time when people ask you questions, I know exactly what you're going to say.
Well, then you can come fill in for me when I want to take a day off. How'd that be? No, you're doing well with it, Albert, and I'm always happy to hear from you. There are so many new colors. You probably have that really bright pink one. But there are now red ones, purple ones, white ones. They're two-tone ones. We had our festival flowers here a couple of months ago, and they're probably 20, 25 different colors. I don't think they're as pretty the double varieties, but there's some double flower varieties as well. So, it sounds like you've got growing down really doing it right, but, if you want to have some fun, look at some of the other colors because they all grow and bloom beautifully just like yours has.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate you calling this morning. And next in line is Greg, and then it'll be Gloria. Good morning, Greg.
Morning. Quick question. I've got three mountain laurels that are 3 years old, and they're just blobs. I mean, they're about 4 or 5 feet tall, but they got long limbs, short limbs. Is there a best time to kind of trim them and shape them a little bit? And any special tricks?
Well, you never want to cut more than a third of the foliage off at any one time. I don't know that I've ever heard a mountain laurel called a blob, but I guess that really is a pretty good description of how they grow. Now, are yours old enough to bloom? If they grew from seed, they have to be 6 or 8 years old to bloom. But are yours old enough to bloom?
Yeah, they've bloomed completely. Yeah,
okay, then the best time to prune them is right after the blooms fade. Believe it or not, even though you can't see them, they've already made their buds for this next spring's growth. They're what are called bud primordia. If you prune them at this time of year, you're cheating yourself out of spring flowers. So I would let them bloom in the spring. As soon as those flowers fade, that's the time to do whatever pruning you need to, and make certain that you never remove, probably no more than one-third of the foliage at any one time.
Okay, and any tricks other than that? I mean, they're weird looking. They don't look like trees. They don't look like bushes. They've got some, some shorter, smaller limbs, and then some real dominant ones, but they're real scraggly looking.
Welcome to Texas Mountain Laurel. They grow wild around my ranch, and I see them in, just about every shape, size, and configuration that you can imagine. And I don't recommend turning them into trees. They are brittle, and I've seen them broken up very badly over the years when we have an ice storm or when we have real violent thunderstorms. So they're best grown as a bushy plant, but if you want to keep them from looking so scraggly, just don't hesitate to prune. But just wait until the flowers fade this next spring, then prune immediately afterwards.
Perfect. Okay, thanks.
You're sure welcome. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Goodbye. Gloria, you'll be up first as soon as we get this break done. Looks like I get to talk about Wild Birds Unlimited. Again, a store that I love. And it's hard to believe we're into October now. First thing you know, it's going to be the Christmas season. You're going to be looking for gifts. I actually know a few disgustingly efficient people that are already out doing their Christmas shopping. And let me tell you, Wild Birds Unlimited is a great place to do it because there's so much more than a bird store. Yes, they have all the feeders you need. Yes, they have various forms of housing. Yes, they have hummingbird feeders with built-in ant stoppers. Matter of fact, they even have, this time of year, their hummingbirds are migrating, and there may still be lots of them one day and not so many the next day. They even have a substance you can add to the nectar that'll keep it fresh longer. Plus, they have the knowledge. They can answer all your questions about feeding. They have feeds, special feeds that are the no-mess feeds that are not going to leave a pile of seeds underneath your feeder. If you want a feeder that excludes the big old white-winged doves and pigeons, yes, they've got those. They have different feed mixes, seed mixes, to attract the right birds and exclude the wrong birds. Plus, they know that birds need different nutrition at different times of year. You're going to find always the freshest and the best seed, as well as suet cake and many other things at Wild Birds Unlimited. Plus, talk about a great gift. They've got optics at very, very reasonable prices, great selection of books about birds and nature in general, and a tremendous selection of gift merchandise. Each Wild Birds Unlimited store shops independently for their gift merchandise, and nobody does it better than Kyle and his staff out at our Wild Birds Unlimited. Out at the corner of Northwest Military and Huebner in the shopping center there, kind of on the side that faces Huebner Road. I'm in there regularly, and let me tell you what, I'm never disappointed when I'm looking for something special. Get out and see my friends at Wild Birds Unlimited.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Our next two callers are Gloria and Edward. And let's just get right back to those phone lines. Good morning, Gloria. Hi, Gloria.
I'm here.
Good morning. I am, too. How can I help you today?
I was just wondering, you talk so much about everything, and you're a walking encyclopedia. And me, dummy me, I always getting, so anxious when you're talking, because I like what you're saying, and then I don't hear parts of what I'm saying because I'm doing something else. I run here and I run there. I go crazy with your program.
You can check with the radio station. I don't have anything to do with how they do. In fact, I haven't really been in the station since COVID, when they ran us out and we all started broadcasting from other places. But I know that they, when the engineers have time, they do have podcasts of the different shows. So sometimes if there's something you're really interested in, you can go back and listen to it again. Again, I don't really know much about that, but you could always call over to the station, and I'm sure they can give you whatever information is out there. But I'm always here for you and always glad to help you. And I started in my grandfather's greenhouse when I was 5 years old, so I've been doing it a long time, and I've seen or made most of the mistakes that everybody else has. So I just am blessed with a reasonably good memory, and I'm glad to be here to help you.
Well, that would be probably if you have something, a remedy for the brain, because mine is going crazy. I mean, I'm not remembering things, you know, and I try really hard to bring it back to my mind, and I just can't sometimes. And then
sometime you go talk to my friend Rhonda over at Rhonda's Nature's Way, because ask Rhonda if anybody, like her little jingle says, if anybody knows, Rhonda knows. and I'm serious, because there are nutritional things that have been shown to, you know, positively influence your memory and things like that. So I'd go by Rhonda's or give her a call sometime and see if she has suggestions that might help with that.
Yeah, I need to go and see her, because I always do. She has good products.
She does, and I had an email from her actually a while back saying that they were really focusing on some things that will improve mental acuity, as they say. So, yeah, she is very familiar with that, and believe me, there are times I wish I can't remember people's names, but I remember plants' names. Now go figure that out. But there are supplements you can take that have been clinically proven to improve your ability to retain things.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was listening to not a podcast. It's on the I think it's on. I go gay for forgetting.
Well,
this doctor.
Yeah,
I
would be very leery of. They call them infomercials, and a lot of those out there are based on wishful thinking. Rhonda's products are based on tested scientific information. So I would be hesitant to give my credit card number to somebody just because they were on the air talking about things. But Rhonda, I trust her. Well, I trust her with my health. I certainly take supplements that I get from her, and she's about the smartest lady I've ever known. And her daughter-in-law, her mom, everybody in Rhonda's family and her husband are all pretty darn sharp. So you get by and see her sometime soon.
Yeah, I'm gonna do that. But before I go, I wanted to ask you about what can I do for my garden or my grass or out there, you know, starting now that's fall, you know, what are the important things I have to do?
Gosh, I can't. I just can't.
A lot of them.
I just can't remember. Huh? No, I'm teasing. The single best thing you'll do for your landscape at this time of year are two things. Fertilize, and on your grass, put on a thin layer of compost if you can. Those are two essentials. Fall fertilizing is the most important fertilizer of the year, and I don't know of anything that will help our summer damaged grass come back faster than a thin layer of compost over it. Now, in addition to that, spraying regularly with a little bit of seaweed and molasses, spray every couple of weeks with that. It will make your plants more cold hardy. It'll help them get through the winter better. There are really not any specific insect problems that are likely to be out there other than spider mites. If we get back to more hot, dry weather, spider mites have been a real issue. And for whatever reason, we're seeing more mealybugs than usual this summer. Those can be controlled with spinosad or the cold press form of neem. But the fertilizer and the compost are the two things that I would do as soon as you can.
Okay, well, good. I'm going to do that. I think that's all, Bob. I had to ask you, but I do appreciate you even reminding me of something.
Well, if you remember any other things, so I'm teasing, you know, do what I do. And I occasionally have to make calls to, you know, state offices and things like that. And I always write down my list of questions because I'm just like you. I'll ask 10 of them and forget the most important ones. So just make your list and call me when you can. And I'll always look forward to visiting with you, Gloria. You have a wonderful weekend.
Just one more thing. there I go. What's your friend's name that comes on? It's Dr. Dirt. Oh, my goodness. When I hear him, you know, you and him are talking, and then you give me that Texas roll, you know, or what do you call it, the Texas talking, you know, and you know, he rolls his tongue, and sometimes he rolls yours. And I said, what in the world are they saying?
Well, DirtDoctor.com.
I love that portion of the program, too.
Well, thank you, and I know Howard's probably listening, and he's smiling, too. He doesn't have to run a nursery like my partner and I do, so he has time to have the most incredible website I've ever seen, which is DirtDoctor.com.
Yes,
so you can always go there and get lots of answers to it. And, Gloria, you have a wonderful weekend. Let me get Edward in here. Good morning, Edward.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Bob.
My pleasure. Thank you. Good morning, Edward.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, I've grown blueberries in pots, and I've been told that the soil must be acidic. How do I make it more acidic?
The blueberries, well, let me put it this way. Being high in organic material is the best source of natural acidity. Compost releases all sorts of humic acids and fulvic acids and things like that, and that's going to be the best thing to help keep that soil on the acidic side. As far as adding acid, no, that's not normally necessary. And if you just periodically put a little compost on as a mulch, if you stay strictly with organic fertilizers, this will increase the acidity along with the organic material. Medina makes a product they call liquid humates, and that is also going to help naturally lower the acidity, so to speak. When you lower the pH, you're increasing the acidity. So I wouldn't be out there buying any special acids or anything like that. If you're growing organically, and if you have, like I say, good organic material in the soil, you're going to have all the acidity you need for blueberries. They're still difficult, challenging to grow, I'll put it that way, because every time we water, you know, we're dumping a highly alkaline water on there. I guess one other thing you could certainly do that would help would be to collect some rainwater. Rainwater is, naturally slightly acid, and you'll keep your soil from becoming alkaline where you can water with rainwater instead of using our highly alkaline groundwater.
Okay, great. Thank you. One more question. We live off of 173 between Pleasanton and Divine, and it's nothing but clay soil. We're looking at some sort of shrubbery to line our border with our property line.
Uh-huh.
15-foot type of shrubbery or tree. What would you recommend in that clay soil?
Are deer an issue to you?
Yeah.
Okay. Probably your single best plant is going to be Yaupon, Yaupon, standard Yaupon holly. I love the variety, which is called Pride of Houston. And it will make a good 10 to 12 foot screen, gives you nice red berries in the winter, deer resistant, cold hardy. That's probably going to be my number one, considering that you do have deer as an issue. Slightly shorter, there is a viburnum, which is called Viburnum suspensum, also known as Sandanqua viburnum. It's going to be a great deer-resistant, cold-hardy plant, outstanding. It doesn't get quite as tall. It's going to top out at about 6 feet.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. Have a good day.
You do the same, sir. I appreciate the call. Thank you. David, hang on. You're going to be next, but I've got to get a break in here, and it looks like I get to talk about Fanix Nursery and Garden Center, and that's always such a pleasure. I've known Mike and Mark. I knew their dad before them, their grandfather before him, but Fanix has been around close to 90 years now, and just one of the probably biggest nursery in San Antonio with over 10 acres and still room to grow, but they are true plantsmen. They are true people that love plants and love helping their customers garden well with things. They have so many different things going on right now. They've got, all the usual, lots of fall veggies, shallots and garlic by the pound. They've recently gotten in their fall supply of citrus trees, starting to get in their containerized fruit trees. One special thing right now, and I'm not sure where they got them, but they've got a bunch of pallet-sized wooden boxes. I imagine they have a picture of them on their website, but be great for storing things. And they I think they're $20, very reasonable price, and they've got a bunch of them they would like you to know about. So check out their website at Fanick, F-A-N-I-C-K, FannickNursery.com, and take a look at those because I'm sure they'll probably go pretty quickly. You're also going to want to check out this big sale they've still got going on bougainvilleas and hibiscus and figs and bananas, 30% off. Those great Jungle Jack plumerias, they're 20% off. Plus, Fanix has things like the Ego lithium-ion battery-powered equipment. They've got things from Traeger, the Traeger pellet grills, and all the accessories. Just always a good time to go visit Fanix. They're open 7 days a week over on Home Green Road, just off South W.W. White. Like I say, you can always visit their website at FannickNursery.com.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
To gardening. My next three callers are David and Mark and Janice. David is up first. Good morning, David.
Morning, Bob. I've got asparagus that I guess last season, whatever, it produced pretty good first time planting it. Now the thing comes up and it looks like Christmas trees everywhere. I cut it back and it comes up like Christmas. What am I doing wrong? Or what's happening?
You're not doing anything wrong. That's just what asparagus looks like during the growing season. You want to encourage those little Christmas trees. The more green foliage you have on your asparagus at this time of year, the more you're going to have to harvest early next spring. So water it, fertilize it, mulch it when you cut it back. I tend to leave mine, if it hasn't frozen back by the 1st of January, I'll lop it down to about an inch tall. But typically it freezes sometime in the fall. At that point, just cut those dead Christmas trees off the top of it. And when it starts putting out the little new shoots coming up in the spring, you harvest and enjoy every single one of them. You don't pick a few and leave a few. You, depending on how long your bed has been in the ground, it may be anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months that you get to harvest, but you simply pick every sprout that comes up. And then when you stop picking, you let it grow and just let it make those little Christmas trees. That's what's going to give it the strength to do it all over again next year.
So just leave them alone until that first freeze.
Yeah, it'll, I mean, it'll look like a forest. And if we have one of those years when we haven't had a freeze to kill it back by the 1st of January, at that point, I'll go ahead and chop it off because I've picked fresh asparagus out of the garden in January some years when we have mild winter. So just water and fertilizer and keep on doing what you're doing.
And do they spread? I mean, get
very slowly. Yeah, they spread. Each individual little crown, as it's called, will grow and spread very slowly. Occasionally they make seed. You know, they have white flowers on them and they have green berries that turn red. You may actually have a few of them come up from seed, and there's nothing at all wrong with that. If it gets, you get too many of them, or maybe every 10 years you can divide them a bit and make an even bigger bed. But, yeah, they spread, but very slowly.
Okay. Okay. Well, that was my biggest question. I thought I had some kind of weird plants. I didn't know what was going on.
You've got normal asparagus, and you've got something to look forward to come January or February.
Well, very good. We and my wife and I enjoyed what we had the first little go around. So
well, it'll get better. It'll get better every year. But they do take a lot of moisture. They do like to be fed regularly. But the best is yet to come, so to speak.
Very good. Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome, David. Thank you, sir. Mark is next. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Bob.
Down morning, sir.
Down in Gonzales County.
Good to hear from you.
Yes, sir. I'm trying to restore a grass airfield that my dad had years ago. It's all coastal, and I want a suggestion on an environmentally friendly and affordable way to fertilize that.
Well, there... The simplest and easiest and cheapest thing to do, do you have a sprayer? Do you have a spray rig you can pull behind a tractor or something like that?
I don't have one, but I have access to one.
Okay. the feed grade molasses, you know, I have lick feeder out for my cattle, and you can buy at a very reasonable price. You can buy molasses, and in this case, I probably would get the molasses that has a little bit of urea added to it. And that is the single best thing you can do. You're going to put out about 5 gallons per acre, and compared to the cost of fertilizer, you know, I know a lot of, I've gotten a number of different hay growers who just every time they, you know, they cut the hay, they'll go out and spray with molasses, and they tell me they're getting the best hay they've ever had and plenty of it when they get moisture as well. So that is one thing that, you know, will very definitely help. Fred Morales down there at Morales Feed, he has a less expensive, poultry manure fertilizer, which he can actually deliver to you in a hopper ready to spread. And that's going to be, as for a true fertilizer, that's going to be the least expensive, and your coastal's going to love that stuff. He also has, and it's not a compost that I would put on your yard, but he has a compost product, that would be fine to use on that coastal field if you want to go one step further. Now, if you want the best of the best, you talk to Stuart Frankie up at Medina Agriculture in Hondo, and he puts his growing green fertilizer up in 1,000-pound totes that are, you know, much more affordable than buying it in 40-pound bags. And, you know, you can run up and pick up a tote of the growing green if you're looking for the very best product out there. Okay. But where, you know, cost is an issue, like I say, the molasses is very inexpensive and very, very effective and, you know, easy to apply. It does take a spray rig, but like say, you say you can borrow or rent one, and, you're going to put it out at the rate of 5 gallons per acre. Beyond that, one of your the thing about the poultry litter fertilizer that Fred has, it doesn't have all the micronutrients. It doesn't have the green sand, doesn't have the humates, doesn't have all the good things that Medina puts in their fertilizer. So it's definitely, you know, not as complete a product. But for a coastal field, it may be all you need.
Right. Okay. I got about 15 acres to do, and it's all clear. I think that works.
You're flying an ultralight or flying a light fixed wing?
No, small plane. Yeah, small fixed wing plane. My dad used to fly out here, and it's a bucket list thing for me to get back to doing that again.
You and Ricky Ware.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a man as big as Ricky was flying that little plane, but he did it and loved it every week of his life. So it'll get you back where you need to be, Mark. Those are the things that I would do. And that's going to, I guess the good news is it's going to really rejuvenate your coastal. The bad news is it's going to soften the soil a bit. But, you know, the lightweight aircraft you're flying, that's not going to be an issue.
Yeah. All right, Bob. Thank you.
You're sure welcome. Thank you, Mark.
No, bye-bye.
Goodbye. All right, James, hang on just a second. Let me get my last break of the hour. I'm sorry, Janice. Hang on just a minute, and we'll get you on next, my last break of the hour. I get to talk to you about Adams and Adams Supply and the fine products that they carry and produce under the name of Nature's Creation. And Nature's Creation products are natural products, organic products. There are lots of different things they produce. They want me to especially tell you that they are packaging a spreadable corn gluten meal. Now, they're positive and negative about pre-emergent herbicides, but if you're going to use a pre-emergent, this is the one you need to use because it doesn't contain any of the toxic materials that so many pre-emergents do. And it also has 9% nitrogen in it. So if we have one of those years when pre-emergents are not especially effective at stopping the weeds, well, you're still getting some good fertilizing action as well. Of course, Nature's Creation also has a great fertilizer they call the Lawn and Garden. I believe it's called the All-Natural Lawn and Garden Fertilizer that's based on alfalfa byproducts, has no manures in it, and it's just a top quality fertilizer for grass and trees and shrubs and everything that grows. And, of course, they package soils. They've got garden soil, potting soil, landscape soil. They've got good compost, good mulches. The Nature's Creation, they're not perfect, but they're pretty darn close. And products are available wherever fine nursery and garden products are sold. Oh, you'll find them at places like Hill Country African Violets. You'll find them at both locations of Rainbow Gardens. You'll find them at both locations of the Plant House. You'll find them at Milburger's. You'll find them at King Feed up at Canyon Lake, Hill Country African Violets, and of course we keep lots of them here at Shades of Green. Quality products from Nature's Creation.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
Back to gardening. Our next caller is going to be Janice. Jimmy, we probably have time for one more caller before we do our interview with Howard Garrett. If somebody wants to call and grab that open line at 210-599-5555. In the meantime, good morning, Janice.
Good morning, Bob. I have three questions for you.
Okay.
What is the proper way to keep what I refer to as a snake plant? You know, it's kind of like a succulent.
Right.
I will let it dry out, water it, and then invariably it all starts going to mush.
Well, Sansevierias like to be in a soil that drains well. So one thing would probably be to switch to a cactus and succulent type of potting soil. While they are really tough plants, they are not cold hardy at all. And if that temperature drops down to freezing, they will just turn to mush, you know, immediately. We always talk about with trees and shrubs being sure that we have planted them high enough. And Sansevieria doesn't really have a root flare, but you never want to add soil to the top of a Sansevieria. When you are repotting, you always want to put soil in the bottom of the pot, set your plant on top of that soil, and just fill and round the edges. Piling soil up above the normal soil line, that, you know, will cause a Sansevieria to kind of turn to mush.
Okay.
But beyond that, they're normally some of the hardiest plants out there. And, oh, there must be 30 or 40 different varieties out there now, some of them with round leaves, some of them with flat leaves, some of them with two-tone or three-tone leaves, some of them that make just a little bird's nest. Sansevieria honeyeye is a little short one. They're one of the, I hate to tell you, but I tell customers that if you can't grow this plant, you're going to have to switch to plastic because they, that and the Dracaena compacta, those are the two hardiest plants I've ever grown. And watering, again, you don't ever want to let them get bone dry. You want to let them get good and dry on the surface, but it's very important to water them thoroughly. When you can stick your finger down and it's dry about half an inch deep, it's time to water them again. And because they will suffer if they get too dry, but given the choice, I'd rather have them on the dry side than on the wet side.
Okay, thank you. My other question is, I've heard on other shows on freezing to go out and water your plants before it freezes. Is that a myth, or should you really do it? And if you do, what is the proper method? Are you watering on top, or are you watering the soil underneath?
In this case, that's good advice. Some of the other shows, I don't agree with a lot of what they have, but you want to water thoroughly before it freezes. Now, once the weather's dropped below freezing, you stop watering because spraying warm water on frozen foliage will totally destroy it. But a plant that has properly hydrated before it gets cold will always be more cold hardy. So kind of judge by the weather. If we've gone for a couple of weeks without any rain, just give your landscape a thorough watering. This goes for grass and trees and ground covers and shrubs. However you normally apply the water, just be sure the entire landscape gets a good thorough soaking before the temperature drops below freezing.
Okay. And then my last question is, you might have already talked about this, but my grass looks like a checkerboard. I've got grass dead, grass dead. Is the best way to do a light rake and then put compost on it?
I'd skip the last rake. but that's not really necessary. But put down some good fertilizer and don't fall for this gimmick of it has to be a winterizer fertilizer. No, use the same thing you use in the spring. Any good organic product. Medina makes a great one. MaestroGrow makes a good one. Nature's Creation makes a good one. But put down your fertilizer and then follow it up with a quarter to half inch of compost. That'll be the single best thing you can do to help rejuvenate that grass.
Okay, that's what I needed to know. Thank you very much, and you have a good day.
Three good questions. You have a good day as well. I appreciate
Thank
the call,
you.
Janice. Uh-huh. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
All right, next in line, probably our last call before our interview with the Dirt Doctor, is Bill. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, this is Bill up here in Blanco.
Yeah.
Long time, no talk.
Well, anyway, I'm glad to hear from you.
Yeah, I think I know the answer to my question, but I want you to verify it. You know, I got 1 inch of rain the other day, the first rain since January.
Yes, sir.
I've got about 7 pecan trees that are very huge with dead leaves on them, and they're not falling off. Are they going to be firewood next year?
Well, it's wait and see. It's not a good sign when a pecan's leaves turn brown and stay on the tree, but I'm sure not going to give up on them yet. An inch is a good start. Hopefully, we will get back to more regular rainfall. And, you know, what I tell people is an old pecan tree, it's been through a lot of droughts. I mean, pecan trees in my field, I'm sure, date from 1800s. And those trees have been through worse droughts than this. So I'm sure not going to give up on them. Having said that, 2011 or 2009, I can't remember, but one of the really bad droughts, I actually lost pecan trees that folded up and died down along my creek, because that creek had never been dry for more than a month or two. It'd get dry and then it'd rain again. And then we had a drought so severe that it didn't rain for 2 years. My pecan trees were out in the field. They didn't even know there was a drought on. They stayed absolutely beautiful. But those trees right along the creek, they had never had to work to get their water. They had all the water they needed right there, so they didn't develop as nearly as extensive a root system. And when we got into a severe drought, they actually folded up and died. So it's at this point, there's not a whole lot. I mean, it's almost impossible to water a big pecan tree. An inch of rain is a good start. You can bet those trees absorbed a lot of moisture directly through the bark. But in all honesty, until we get to about April of next year, we're not really going to know how badly hurt they were. But hopefully, again, if these are big established trees, hopefully they will come back out. But if there's any way you can give them supplemental water, do so. A little bit of Garrett juice is always going to help. And, you know, a little fertilizer. A fertilizer using the organic stuff, it doesn't dehydrate things. So if you look at Howard Garrett's website and look at what he calls the sick tree treatment, the steps that he recommends there are going to give you the very best chance of having them come back next spring. But at the top of the list is just more good rainfall, and let's hope we get back into a wetter period.
Yeah, like my trees are probably like yours is old. I can't even put my hands around them, you know.
Yeah.
They're that big around and circumference. So, and my problem with supplemental watering, you know, I live on well water. And
right.
Of course, all our wells around the area have been tested, and they're pretty low, you know.
Yes, sir.
And so it's a danged if you do and a danged if you don't, you know.
I feel your pain, so to speak, and the fact that they are, you know, trees that have, you know, been around for over 100 years, that gives me, you know, a lot of hope that because they've been through the drought of the 50s, which was our single worst 1 year drought was 2011. It was relatively recent, but the drought of the 50s, when it, you know, stayed dry for about 5 or 6 years, that's what they call the drought of record. If you go back to some of the historical data, we apparently had a really bad drought in the 1890s. When you go back more than that, I think back around 1200 AD, they had a drought that lasted 100 years in this area. So, it's we've seen worse. The trees have survived, so I'm just hoping, looking around, and not just pecans, but red oaks and a lot of trees that have come through some pretty bad droughts look real bad right now. But follow the sick tree treatment as far as you can. I know on these your root flares are exposed, but a little bit of azomite, green sand fertilizer, garret juice, all those things are going to help, and it'll help spraying on the bark, you know, as well as on the ground around the trees. But until about next April, I don't think we're really going to know.
Yeah, well, when you speak of the drought of the 50s, I remember that because I'm 78. And there were four of us kids left. I'm a family of six, and I was the youngest, and I got the last bath water, but everybody used the same bath water to get up to go to school. So mine wasn't the cleanest, but we did what we had to do.
Yes, sir. That's the way Texans have done for as long as Texas has been here. My great-great-great-great-grandfather was present in Texas to vote against joining the Union. He saw the Civil War coming and didn't want Texas a part of it. So, yep, our roots go deep, so to speak. Bill, it's good to hear from you. Don't wait so long to call me again, and I'll look forward to our next visit.
You bet. You have a great weekend. Safe one.
You do the same, sir. All right, we'll be right back after news for a visit with Howard Garrett here on KTSA San Antonio.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right, back to gardening on this nice, nice Saturday morning out there. A little overcast. We weren't mentioning rain, but, you know, crazier things have happened. Anyway, this is not the time of the show that we take more phone calls. We'll save some time toward the end of the show to do that. This is the time that we get to visit with one of the greatest gardeners I know, and that's the Dirt Doctor, Mr. Howard Garrett. Good morning, Howard.
Good morning. It is cool here in Dallas. Don't know about there, but I had a question for you before we get started. Was she referring to your accent or mine when she was talking about Texas accents?
Well,
I
don't either. She said something about rolling the R's, and I guess maybe she was talking because, you know, my Spanish is not good, but having a little sister that lives and has lived in Mexico for 50 years, and perhaps my tongue rolls things a little bit more, but, I think she's from East Texas, so they hear things a little different. They don't realize that they're the ones with the accents.
Well, that's where I'm from, too, so.
Yeah, well, you and me, I was born in Tyler over there. You're from the Palestine area, as I recall, so are from Pittsburgh. That's right. That's right.
Me and Bo Pilgrim and Homer Jones and home of the Ezekiel Airship. I'm in the same museum with the Ezekiel Airship over in Pittsburgh.
Interesting part of the world. Fun place to go back to visit, but I'm glad we don't live over there anymore. But no, it's a beautiful day down here. It was 62 degrees when I walked out the door this morning. I know it's a little bit warmer here in San Antonio, but this is the first day that I would really say that it's kind of felt like fall. We got reasonably good rain across most of the area earlier this week, so it's things are looking up. I hope that we'll get back to a little bit more regular rainfall, but I tell you what, it's been a hard summer, and I just driving through neighborhoods and all, there are lots of dead-looking trees with dead leaves all over them that have not dropped. So it's going to be interesting to see. And trees that I'm a little surprised have had problems. We got a lot of red oaks showing a lot of damage on them. Magnolias showing lots of damage on them, and and of course, lawns were just pretty much devastated. I was going to ask you what your recommendations beyond what we talk about all the time on lawn recovery, but I don't recall a year that we've seen as many plants in as serious shape as they appear to be right now.
Well, I was pointing out a couple of magnolias to some guys I was playing golf with the other day, and these magnolias were in an area that was, you know, irrigated, the turf looked great under the trees. So it was just pure air burn that killed them, and they're dead. It's killing
really
big magnolias here. There's an FBI headquarters near the airport in Irving, in the Las Colinas area. And I don't know who designed it, but whoever did designed a huge number of native cedars and some big hollies and a whole bunch of evergreens in the kind of the parkway beside, you know, near the street. And I'll bet you 50% of those plants, and a lot of them are the native cedars, are completely dead. And it's it's probably a combination. It's probably a combination of the last three winters and then this summer. But 110 degrees, that air temperature did a lot of damage. I'm seeing the same thing you are.
Are these the Ashii or the Virginiana that you have up that way?
These are Eastern Red Cedar. But
yeah.
I'm seeing it across the board. Like you said, sometimes live oak trees, sometimes red oaks, sometimes the native cedars. It's kind of amazing. And then a lot of plants are totally, you know, untouched. It was very inconsistent. There's one thing we're seeing right now that's heavy. I was wondering if y'all were too. I'm seeing more squirrel damage than I've ever seen in my life. And it's where they are eating twigs that are pretty good size, so they're killing an area that is the size of a bushel basket or two, three times that size in some cases all throughout the tree.
Yep.
And we're also seeing just a whole lot of twigs that are just eaten off and they fall into the ground. It doesn't look like they're eating them. It looks like they're just doing damage, playing around or having fun. So it's a couple things. And also, I've seen in my own yard here a few trees that are throwing down limbs that have been damaged by the twig girdler. So we're seeing a lot of cosmetic issues on trees. I don't think any of it's devastating, but it's on trees that have their flares uncovered that are healthy trees, and it's on trees that are too deep in the ground that aren't very healthy. It's not consistent that way either.
Well, and it brings up, that's one of the things that I wanted to ask you about. And we've seen some squirrel damage, but the weird thing, and our arborist friend Ed Etter actually sent some pictures. He said they are seeing more sapsucker damage on trees. And like you say, trees that have been properly cared for, exposed flares, the whole works. But he said they've seen sapsucker damage on our native persimmons, and I can't say that I have ever seen a persimmon with sapsucker damage. And I wonder if, you know, just the lack of moisture, if the trees are concentrating, if they have a more concentrated sugar level in the sap. That's and we've talked, you and I have talked many times about the fact that stress trees seem to be always have more sapsucker damage, and I wonder if, you know, if the drought has acted in that way, that somehow things are simply have more sugar in the sap, and that might be what's attracted to the squirrels as well as the sapsuckers.
I think there's a concentration of the sugars, absolutely. I think that's what's going on. One of my consulting projects, I recommended an arborist to go in and do the root flare and do the basically the sick tree treatment for the entire site. And the trees started growing. The color got better overnight. You know, all the normal things we expect happened. And then about a month after that, the squirrels hit the trees again and did a huge amount of damage. It's the darndest thing I've ever seen. And what they're doing, they're chewing twigs that are a quarter of an inch up to maybe probably an eighth to a quarter of an inch. Most of them, and they're eating it all the way around. And I think they're just trying to get moisture and nutrition in that concentrated sugar. I think that's exactly what's going on. The trees are trying to defend themselves and by setting up those sugar levels, and they're creating a situation where the birds can detect it in the squirrels, and here comes a lot of damage. I'm also seeing a lot of damage from armadillos more than normal, too, rooting around in my garden. I put garlic out to see if it would deter them, and it didn't do as well as a garlic pepper. I found in one of the big box stores a product that had black pepper and garlic in the same product. Kind of interesting. And I dusted it in that area real heavily, and it seemed to work pretty well. I think that still the blood meal might be the best deterrent, but that garlic and pepper might be good, because from the garlic, and I recommended it where we had the squirrel damage on the project, drench either liquid garlic into the soil or put out dry garlic, dry granulated garlic, and water it in really well. And that stuff is so systemic that it might repel the beasts as well.
Well, we know it works against thrips and, you know, lots of other sucking insects. Garlic is just, it's got several things going for it. Number one, it has so many uses in the landscape. And number two, it is so easy to grow. And I know you've had good luck planting it year-round, but if there's one month of the year that I think is probably the single best month to plant garlic, I think it'd be October. So I hope all of our listeners are putting an extra row or two of garlic in the ground this year, because it has so many different uses.
Yeah, as much as I have that comes back on its own, I'm planting more myself right now. The cool season stuff that I've gotten in the ground, everything from bok choy to Swiss chard and everything in between, is really looking good. The only pest that I saw, and it's easy to spot it because you'll start seeing the holes in the leaves of greens, mustard greens, and various things. And if you'll have had a lot of questions about it, if you just turn those leaves over, and you got to look closely, because those little green worms are tiny.
Yeah.
And that's what's doing the damage. And I noticed that when you first start seeing the holes in the leaves, if you'll turn those leaves over, crush those little green worms, you kind of shut it down. You don't even have to spray spinosad or BT or anything else. You can do that, and it works great if you have to. But a little hand crushing works very well on those little beasts.
What is it? Somebody said it was a Chinese saying that the most effective insect control is the footprint of the gardener.
They're
too small to step on. But they not only get after the greens, but one of my favorite bedding plants is alyssum, sweet alyssum. It is just fragrant. Bees love it. And it has been absolutely beautiful this summer. Some of our beds, some of Roberta's beds, it's probably the prettiest alyssum we've ever seen. And that's the one thing. If you ever think your alyssum is just going out of flower, get down and look at it really carefully, because those same tiny little green worms will get in there and eat the buds before they open. And a lot of people think, oh, it's just gone out of bloom. But like you say, you look closely, and those itty-bitty green caterpillars. I'm not really even sure what kind of a butterfly or moth they turn into, but they, for something so tiny, they can sure do a lot of damage.
It's probably that little bitty white moth or butterfly that you see flitting around, because if you'll watch closely, when you see that one, it's only about a half inch wide, the wingspan on it. And when you see it land, if you go and look at that spot, a lot of times you're going to see one little translucent green egg there, tiny little egg. So that's what's doing the damage there. It's the green worm. Some people call it a cabbage green worm or other terms. But I just call it green worm. And they're pests.
I call them other things. Yeah, I call them other things, but things that we can't say on the air. they always pick the prettiest and best to go after. If I can remember to, if you've not seen it, I'll try to take a picture and send you sometime in the next couple of days. But I don't know if I mentioned my neighbor friend down the road gave me for Christmas last year, gave me a squirrelinator. I think we might have mentioned that, but it's a live trap, but that's the most remarkable squirrel trap that I've ever found. Like I say, I'll try to take a picture of it for you, and that you can catch multiple squirrels, which I have done, and just baiting it with bird seed or something like that. Hard to describe, but the squirrels push their way in and then can't get back out, and I think the most I've caught at one time has been three, but he was catching six and seven at a time, and then it's easy to open and release them when you get to wherever you've decided they need to live instead. But anybody who's seeing a lot of squirrel damage, sounds like a gimmick, but it really does work. It's called the squirrelinator.
Yeah, I've mentioned it to some people on my show too. Sounds good. I haven't tried it yet, but I need to. They're a pest. There's no question about it. Probably the biggest pest that we have. They tore up our cushions on our outdoor furniture, and we bought some new pillows, and knock on wood, they haven't started working on them yet. But they can really do a lot of damage. Digging out potted plants, digging out flats where you're trying to get some seeds going. If you have them exposed, the squirrels can find them, and they'll do a number on those kinds.
Well, and I get teased because I refer to them sometimes as bushy-tailed tree rats, but they're just a rodent, and they've got the dentition to do a lot of damage. And they like rats and mice, they can sometimes be guilty of chewing on wiring. And I had an auto mechanic tell me that the reason that that we have a problem periodically is that especially on coated wire coming out of China, for whatever reason, they put something, some carbohydrate in that plastic that they put on the wire. That is what they're going after. That's almost like a sugar of some sort, and that's what they're going after. But I've known people who had some pretty expensive repairs from having that wiring harness under the hood chewed on, and that's what it is. And squirrels will do it just like rats will.
Yeah, it's the biggest pest that I deal with and get the most questions about it. The turf question is interesting because it's embarrassing to see our lawn at the office. For some reason, it got hammered by the winters, and this 110 maybe pushed it over the edge, I think. But I think it was the last couple of winters, and it's almost totally shady where most of the damage was done. And I'm seeing a lot of lawns around town, around the Lakewood area where I drive more than anywhere, that are completely dead too. And the ones that are in the worst shape are the ones that are in the shade. So you got the stress from the shade, the competition of the root systems of the trees, and then the winter as well. So I think in a lot of cases, if you're going to go with grass, you're going to have to replant. I would probably recommend switching over to ground cover. The ground cover that we've found to be the most durable here by far is Asian jasmine. And we've even had some damage on Ophiopogon and the Persian ivy in my front yard. We had a little bit of damage to the red oaks there, so full sun got in on some of the areas, but in the whole front yard used to be Persian ivy.
Right, I remember. Really
gorgeous, and I think it's going to completely die out.
Wow.
And it's the combination of the winters and changing the storm, allowing some direct sunlight in. Beautiful ground cover, but people need to be real careful about planting too big an area with it. But the Asian jasmine didn't blink an eye. It's just so durable, it's unreal.
And I feel the same way about it. We went for periods of months without rain, and people that totally stopped watering, they've lost a bit of Asian jasmine just from the drought combined with the heat. But the people that watered it even monthly, it has come back, and it's kind of like we talk about the knockout roses. The biggest problem with them is just they're so overused. And Asian jasmine is used so widely, but I tell people the reason it's used so widely is because it is so durable, and it does take a little while. The old saying about the first year it sleeps, the second year it creeps, and the third year it leaps. If you're starting with the little 4-inch pots, which is about all that you can really afford if you're doing a very big area, it does take a couple of years to get really thick, but once it's there, there's just very little goes wrong with it, and it is a really, really durable plant.
The other ground cover I'm recommending is horse herb, and at the office, I didn't even plant any. There was just some there, and I started catching it with the mower. It's the only time I ever catch clippings, and just take the clippings to another area and throw them out, and if you do it while those little yellow flowers are on the plant, it'll start growing in a new area and spread pretty well. The parkway beside our office now is just about 100% horse herb and really looks good. And it'll get hurt, you know, the 110 degrees hurt it. It looked like it had killed it, turned totally brown. And in the winter, it dies to the ground, but it just comes back 100% without any trouble at all as soon as the temperature gets milder and you get a little moisture on it. So I'm a big fan of it too.
Oh yeah, I am too. And they're actually the Parks Department here is starting to plant in some areas that don't get regular water. The other one that I love and it goes away in the winter too is the Ceratostigma, what people call dwarf plumbago, even though it's not a plumbago. That is one tough plant too. I finally got around to watering mine for the first time this summer. And it responded with a huge show of blue flowers, and foliage perked right up on it. But that's it. If you don't mind having it go back to just, you know, dirt in the winter months, I've never had it fail to come back. It comes back thick and beautiful, grows in the shade, grows in the sun, and those cobalt blue flowers are really attractive when it's in bloom.
I've got some in the backyard, and it's doing the same thing. It took a few years. It was interesting. It took a few years for it to start blooming in my yard, which is real shady. But once it started blooming, it's done real well the last couple of years. And the winters and the 110 degrees didn't bother it a bit.
Yeah, good plants. And I tell you, you have to be careful, as we've talked, to avoid some of those hybrids. But The little Japanese maples have, for the most part, have taken the summer with a lot less damage than I expected to see. We've seen some foliage burn on them, but everything seems to be coming back out, and I don't think those trees are seriously hurt. They, surprisingly, because they are a little bit more delicate, and many of them, you know, grow best as understory trees, but I've been a little surprised at how well they seem to have tolerated this summer.
The Japanese maples are terrific. The one that is in the category of, I don't think I'd recommend planting it anymore, is the Shantung maple.
Yeah,
I've seen some Shantungs that just completely died, including one that I planted years ago. It's the first one that I knew about in Dallas, actually. I think they had one out at A&M when they first started messing with it. But the one that I planted years ago at one of my previous offices, it started kind of going downhill a limb at a time and looking bad, and now today it's completely dead. So
wow.
And I'm seeing that on some other Shantung maples on some other projects. For some reason, it's almost like those hybrid maples that they bred, you know, the silver maple to the red maple to create those things.
Right.
For the beautiful red fall color, but they don't hold up well enough to be on the market. And I'm afraid that Shantung may be the same way.
Apparently so. And Orangeola is still one of your favorites?
Well, it's hard to beat. The one in the front yard is doing beautifully, and I've recommended it to other people. And I was talking to one of the wholesale suppliers of plant material out in North Carrollton area out there, and they told me the same thing, the feedback they've gotten through the past several years of selling Japanese maples. It's the one that's getting the rave reviews more than any other variety. It's great. Orange, sure. Ola.
Very good. Very good. Well, it has certainly been an interesting summer. I hope you enjoyed your little trip to Arizona as much as we enjoyed our little sojourn up to Colorado a couple of weeks ago.
Well, we did. We got to get caught up on Rio. Those of you that heard me tell the story of Rio, the dog we rescued coming out of the mountain outside of Tucson. But we've got a I took a nice little play fight that Rio and Midge, their other dog that they already had, it's on Facebook now, so you can check it out and see how well they're getting along. They have really hit it off well.
That's great. And the story is good. I still kept that on my phone from the time that you sent that, because that's just such a good rescue story. And rescues do, I think, make some of the most grateful pets you will find anywhere. And if you ever find yourself in the vicinity of Carbondale, Colorado, we went back and revisited the True Nature Garden up there, and it is a really well done private public garden. It's a public garden that was pretty much privately funded to start, and they've sure got some interesting things. They've got one of the prettiest labyrinths I've ever seen. They have that reflexology walk I think we talked about, and we've gotten a lot of ideas for things that we want to do someday, it was good. We sure enjoyed. We're personally taking credit for this cool weather. We're claiming that we dragged it back behind the plane. Anyway, I sure hope it continues, because this morning especially, like you were saying, is just one of the first really cool ones. Hope it's going to inspire people to get out and do a little bit more gardening, both in the flower beds and the vegetable gardens, because there's sure some pretty things out there to grow in some, like you mentioned, bok choy. Golly, I love growing bok choy and some of those things that do so well in the fall. There's just never enough space in the garden, never enough time in the day to do it all.
Well, my computer, when it goes into pause mode, it starts showing other photographs that I have in my photos area, and one of the pictures that just popped up is one we should maybe recommend more than we do, and that's creeping thyme as a ground cover.
Oh, yeah.
That is a beautiful, beautiful, if you have enough sun, ground cover, very low growing, and the colors ranging from pink to light blues really are attractive. Plus, you've got a useful herb.
And it's funny you should mention that, because I was just talking about the really, really well-done labyrinth that they have True Nature, and that's what in a big portion of it, that's what's growing between the stones. And I highly recommend it. I always tell people, when you're planting between stones, you know, don't plant it at ground level. You've got to recess that in between the stones, whatever you're using, whether it's a dwarf bondo or something like the creeping thyme. You've got to set it down so that if the top gets worn down, it can still come back. But it is a beautiful, and it is truly a ground-hugging ground cover, but wonderful little plant, and enough scent to be interesting, too, when you walk over it. That black-stemmed peppermint is another one that is really quite hardy, that people planting around flagstones and things. It produces enough underground runners that even if the top gets worn down, it bounces back pretty well. And every time you walk through the area, it smells like peppermint candy. So not quite as drought-tolerant as the others we were talking about, but it's another one that I like.
Be careful about escaping and becoming a problem. I've learned that the hard way. One thing that I might mention as we leave here, I didn't finish saying what I recommend on lawns that are in trouble. Putting some compost at this time of the year would be great, just lightly broadcast it, and then spraying the whole place with Garrett juice is something I've had really good success with. So adding that to your program, of course, the dry fertilizers we recommend all the time will do a lot of good, but a little different approach that might give you a little different result is compost along with kind of a regular spraying every few weeks, if you have the time and the budget, with some Garrett juice, the Garrett juice mixture that Medina makes that has a little bit more fertilizer horsepower would probably be what I'd recommend.
Well, I recommend it several times a day. And it's just, like you say, it nothing, and I've seen it bring back things that I thought were dead. The other benefit between that combination of the compost and the Garrett juice is that it's the best pre-emergent I've ever found. I did it in an area where the sticker burrs were so bad the dogs wouldn't walk through it, in an area of my front yard that we use for a croquet court. And the did it this time of year. I think this is the very best time of year, although there's never a bad time. But it went from being just solid burrs. I think the next year I probably pulled four or five plants in the entire area through the whole summer month. So people fighting weeds of almost any sort, that combination of compost and Garrett juice, I think is the best pre-emergent program that you can do.
I agree. Well, my dog, Nellie, my tree climber, who's retired from tree climbing because she's gotten a little bit overweight, but she's staring at me, telling me that it's time for her breakfast. So.
Well, you go give her her breakfast and have a wonderful week, Howard, and we will just continue this conversation again. And y'all have a great day, and enjoy the eclipse next week.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Bob. See you next week.
All right. Thank you, sir. Goodbye. Mr. Howard Garrett is a dirt doctor. DirtDoctor.com, best site on the Internet for information that is truly applicable to our area as well as to North Texas. So check it out when you have a chance. Right now, I get to talk to you again about Green Grower Organics and Sam Sitterly. And his answer to all of these pest control companies that want to put you on a program where they come out and spray poison on your yard and use synthetic fertilizers and things like that, and, oh, they'll come out every quarter and do that. Well, Sam will set up a program where he comes out quarterly without a contract. He's not trying to trap you into something you can't get away from. But the difference in what he does is it's all organic, it's all natural. It includes everything most landscapes need. It's like quarterly application of compost tea and fertilizing. It's as many applications of beneficial nematodes as necessary to maintain the health of things. It's annual application of trace elements, and it's the same thing that he's been practicing for years, but now he's got it set up in an official program. So if you've been trapped by some of the poison spreaders, you might want to just give Sam a call and get it set up where it's done organically and done right. And yet you don't have to remember to do it yourself. One of many things, I mean, his motto is, saving the world one organic landscape at a time. And he's been doing this sort of thing for over 30 years. Still, there's a lot of consultation. If you just need an occasional visit from somebody, you can always call and set that up. Always understand any charges up front. But it's just one of the many very, very good services provided by Sam and his crew at Green Grow Organics. You can check them out on the web, greengroworganics.com. And always give them a call, 210-599-5565.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550, KTSA, and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Jimmy tells me the lines are open. Got time for at least a couple more phone calls. If you want to give a call, you know the number, 210-599-5555. I do want to tell you that with the weather cooling down like it has, I'm pretty much recommending that people can plant just about everything in the vegetable garden now. If the temperature stays down in the 60s like this, I'll even be recommending spinach within the next week or so. But like Howard was saying, the bok choy, the chard, pretty much all the leafy lettuces and things can certainly go in the ground. Root crops like radishes and beets, carrots, turnips, things like that most definitely can grow in the ground. Onions not available yet. Now, if you want to try growing some onions from seed, you're not really getting very far ahead because plants will be about the same size if you plant seed now or if you plant the transplants when they come in early next month, and a whole lot easier to put in the little plants. Garlic is just a great thing to grow, and it's certainly October, best month of the year to get it started. Just a lot of things to do out in the vegetable garden, and flowers, I think it's still too early for the big pansies, but I think you're okay on Johnny Jump Ups. I know you're okay on dianthus and petunias and snapdragons, ornamental kale and cabbage, alyssum. There's just no excuse for having a drab landscape right now. With this bit of cool weather, there are some absolutely gorgeous things available out there, mainly for the sun. It's a little early for cyclamen. Another couple of weeks, if it continues to cool down, we'll be recommending cyclamen and also the German primrose for the shade. But ornamental kale and cabbage, those things will do well in, say, shade or sun, and starting to be time to get them into the ground as well. So just absolutely no reason not to have a good garden growing and to have plenty of color out there in the landscape. It's the lawn recovery, as we were talking about, is, again, spread that organic fertilizer, thin layer of compost over the top of it, and then spray it down with something like Garrett juice. That I have seen bring back yards that people thought were dead. Some of the St. Augustine now is dead. We're just going to have to wait and see how much comes out there. But your Bermuda, your zoysias, things like that, those, it would be very unusual to have any permanent damage. A lot of yards look bad that are Bermuda and or zoysia, but those things, I think, if you go with the compost, go with the Garrett juice, and again, the first thing to go down is just your good organic fertilizer, and it's the same fertilizer spring and fall. Don't follow for this story that you have to get something that says winterizer. That's just a gimmick to sell you a different chemical fertilizer, synthetic fertilizer, and it's not what you want to use. The same Growing Green by Medina is still one of the best fertilizers you can use. The Premium Lawn and Garden Food by Nature's Creation, great fertilizer. Texas Tea by Maestro Row. All of these things are great, literally, for everything in the ground, in the landscape. I highly recommend the Liquid Has to Grow Plant and the new Liquid Fish Blend from Medina. Those are the two things that I alternate, both in my greenhouse and on the pots, and just gives absolutely wonderful results. Once again, got time for a couple more phone calls. If you want to dial, you know the numbers, 210-599-5555. Jimmy, I think we need to get one more break in here with the recorded commercials before the end of the show. So let's do that, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about fall gardening.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Wrapping up the show today. We'll do this again tomorrow from 8 till 11. If you didn't get through today, I look forward to visiting with you tomorrow. Probably finish the show up with Mary and Angie. Mary is first. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Bob, and thank you for being there.
It's my pleasure.
My call is about, I cut down two mountain laurels in my backyard because my daughter had told me that they were poisonous trees, and I have feral cats that mess with them and my dogs. And one of them, I didn't cut it all the way to the ground, so it's blooming again. And I love those things. I brought them all the way from Rolling Oaks Estates over here to Marbach and 410. But because she told me they were poisonous, I cut them down. What should I do? Should I let it grow? Or I'll trust you better than Google.
Yeah, you should stop listening to her. They are mildly toxic, and the main thing that's toxic is the seeds. And your kitty cats aren't going to mess with the seeds. They actually contain, a drug-like substance called mescaline. And supposedly the Native Americans used this as their hallucinogenic drug of choice, 150 years ago. And so they've been around forever. But I will ask Dr. Kirby about this tomorrow, but I've never heard of a case of poisoning from animals, getting into the mountain laurel. For that matter, things like lantana are probably more toxic than mountain laurel. So I'd let them grow back out, and I would just enjoy those beautiful flowers. If you are concerned, pick the seed pods off. Don't let the seed pods go to maturity, because those red beans, could certainly cause some stomach upset. And it's not to say that an animal that had a particular or specific allergy might not have problems with it, but there are a lot more pets killed by chocolate, the cocoa mulch, and There are some toxic things out there, like oleanders, like Carolina jessamine. Mountain laurel is pretty low on my list of things that pose any danger. Sago palms, again, are one of the worst, especially, you know, where they chew on the little pups coming out. But I would not worry about your mountain laurels.
Yeah, I don't have any of those. Another issue real quick is the city of San Antonio told me that I could put it in a green can, and I did. But don't they use that for passing out to the public and all that stuff?
It goes in as part of a mulch, but once again, there's not anything in there that's toxic enough, especially once it's dry. It's about as harmless as it comes.
Okay, good. Well, like I said, I trust you, so I'm glad I got to talk to you today.
Yeah. Now, I can't say that about oleanders or poison ivy or things like that. They mix all that into that mulch, too. It's just whatever comes in. And we had a customer one time. This poor lady came in, and I mean, that old song about going to need an ocean of calamine lotion, she got down on her hands and knees and spread what turned out to be poison ivy-infused mulch. And there's some bad things in there, but mountain laurels are not one of them. I don't believe there's any cause for concern there, Mary.
Thank you so much, Bob, and you have a wonderful day.
And you do the same and enjoy this cool. Let's finish the show. Yeah, it is wonderful out there. Let's finish the show up with Angie. Good morning, Angie.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
My strawberry patch did not make it through the brutal summer, and okay. I'm wondering if it's time to plant some new ones.
This is the single best month of the year for planting strawberries. October is just, if you're going to grow strawberries, this is the time to put them in. There's some new varieties out there. I'm still fond of an old one called Sequoia, if you can find it. But I'm not sure how much luck you'll have. But, no, strawberries can be grown very successfully. Just, you know, grow them in a good, bright, sunny area and soil that drains well. They're not going to be quite as beautiful as they are down on that sandy soil around Poteet, but still,
well, that's right. I live right in Atascosa County.
Oh, okay. Right, well, then you've got the perfect place for growing strawberries. You find them and plant them as soon as you can, Angie.
Yeah, I'm trying to find them. I'm going to go to see if Fanix had them yet tomorrow. I hope.
I'd give them a call to be sure. I know they've got their garlic and their shallots in, so strawberry plants are usually pretty close behind. But before you make that long drive, give them a call and see. 648-1303. That's one number I know by heart. But and call them early. They get busy during the day and they stop answering their phone. I have had trouble getting through a time or two until I finally got somebody's cell number. But anyway, you give them a call. They'll be a great source for you.
Great.
I know they're available. They're available because we've started getting them four-inch pots. But I know Fanix gets them as bare root, which makes them really inexpensive if you're planting a bunch of them. And tell Mark and Mike I said hello.
Yeah, I usually get them there, and they just didn't. They usually survive over the summer, but they just died on me this year. I did everything I could, but nothing.
Well, that's what 107 degrees will do. Let's hope it's a while before we see this kind of summer again.
Yeah, I put shade cloth over them and everything, but oh well. And real quick, another one was, I have two big cold hardy hibiscuses in about 5-gallon pots, and I wanted to put them in the ground. One's a pink Confederate rose. Is that what it's? Yes, that's what it's called.
Yeah,
and one's a red variety. Can I put them in the ground or wait till spring?
Do it this afternoon. Afternoon. Mulch them a little extra heavy this winter, but we had some of those. First year we opened the nursery was our super, super cold winter. Got down to single digits. It was 1983, and we had mallows in pots that came back, raised up out of the ground containers. It just doesn't get any hardier than that. And it was interesting. We do a big international gift market in Atlanta, you know, every July. And over there, they've actually started using some of those in a boulevard planting. And we went along one spot. I must have been 5 or 6 blocks long where they were just absolutely solid planting in the medians of one of the roads over there. So they're one of the most underused plants out there.
I'm a Okay, maybe I won't kill them.
You'll do well with them, and I appreciate the call today, Angie.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your help. Bye-bye.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you. Well, the Home Improvement Show with Martin Bamba is up next here on KTSA Radio. Hope you'll stick around for that. And I hope you join me again tomorrow morning, because we do talk plants from 8 until 11. And then, of course, Dr. Kirby comes in and we talk your pet's health from 11 till 12. That's our Sunday routine. In the meantime, like I say, get out and enjoy. This is one of the coolest, nicest mornings. Most of the area got a pretty good rain over, Thursday morning, I guess. So get out and work in that vegetable garden. Get your plants in the flower beds, again, petunias, dianthus, snapdragons, ornamental kale and cabbage, alyssum, Johnny Jump Ups. I think it's too early on pansies, but great time on the others. See you tomorrow right here on KTSA Radio, beautiful San Antonio, Texas.